Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Well, we've had a few changes in the last couple of days, actually a lot of them yesterday. So we're in a huge transition here at Action Radio. And so a lot of reporters, we've kind of finished up what they wanted to do. You know, they've said their bit and they've accomplished what they wanted to and are moving on to other things, which is fine. You know, one of the ones is, and this just happened, I think, about 3 weeks ago, maybe now, our World's Greatest Doctors panel. We did 18 weeks with the most incredible people. And I can't believe I got all the time we had, because originally I was thinking, you know, one, maybe two episodes with Dr. Judy Mikovits, Brian Artist, Ben Marble earlier on in the show, Jim Thorpe, data expert John Cullen. I mean, it was just a fabulous panel. Other folks that dropped in, Dr. Molly James, Dr. Angie Farella, Dr. Christiane Northrup, just amazing people that would come by the show. And then we had like Brandon House from Lindell TV. And let me see who else. Gregory Wrightstone, CO2 Coalition. We sort of contrasted carbon dioxide lies, you know, with COVID lies. And the same lies. It's really kind of interesting. So just incredible people dropped by the show. It was amazing to do that. But, you know, as things happen, the doctors got busy. They're doing their own thing. And Dr. Mikovits especially is taking our legislation, our vaccine product liability bill, and our Section 230, you know, eliminate big tech censorship bill, and taking those out. And that's pretty cool. So that's a wonderful thing that's happening. Today, you know, I'm just waiting for Bill to check in with us now. And he's the only reporter we have. You know, Wendy's not feeling well. And our wild women of wine, weed, and wellness Wednesday, all of my W's, have a new business to run. So they've taken off too. That and Captain Tom Stewart, who was on for, I think, maybe a couple of months. Unbelievable. It was amazing to have Captain Tom, again, as long as we did. So I don't regret any of this. I have nothing but you know, the best of wishes for people. Nobody's left me hanging. No one's left us stuck here. I always have tons of material to talk about. So that's never an issue. And this really is a place where you can, you know, come and go and try out stuff and, you know, experiment and do some things that you can't do on regular radio. Because I'm pretty open because of all the things I was told that I couldn't do on regular radio. And so that's how that works. So assuming all is well, and Bill, let me see, let me check my messages here, because he usually calls in right away. And so, you know, stuff happens. Maybe he's caught in traffic. Maybe he's, who knows what's going on. So let's see if I get a Bill. Okay, so Bill's going to check in just a couple minutes. Okay, that's good. That's normal. So let me just get the announcements out. And right now we're open. The biggest thing is I'm open for new reports. I think Dr. Angie Farella is going to have a report here pretty soon. We've got Heather Strickland, who has a new book, Rebel Keto. It's like, you know, being rebellious as a dieter. She's got a new book coming out today. And so that's going to take up her time. But we've got just a lot of gaps, a lot of things open. And so Bill, who's now here, maybe he has some ideas and suggestions. But I'm going to have plenty of time to talk about the issues. See, a month ago, I was worried. I didn't have any time to talk about the issues because I had so many guests and so many reporters. And now we have exactly the opposite. I've got nothing but time to talk. And so I want to fill it in with other things. All right, let's get to Bill.
On tight, Action Radio presents the Fetke Report.
Good morning, Action Radio land. We are less than 1 month away from the November elections. Early mail-in voting is already gone out, and we are only about a week away from early voting starting. So, Greg, we have all sorts of things going on. We have races across the country that are neck and neck. Mm-hmm. And right now, it looks like it go either direction. It could be a big win for the Republicans. It could be a big win for the Democrats, or it could end up being holding still and keeping exactly where we are right now.
It's very interesting, but I'm just sorry that our only choices are between Democrats and Republicans. I want more choices. You know, I want independents. I want, you know, but the independents aren't viable. And because we're such a by whatever it's called, the bipartisan or whatever the word is, two-party system that really eliminates, because they maintain the two-party system and we don't get a lot of other candidates. So the choices really were made before the primaries. And it really comes down to who runs in the primaries. Once the primaries are done, we have the choice of, what they think is the best Republican versus what they think is the best Democrat. And quite honestly, a lot of times, none of the above, would be the best answer. So that's, where I stand there. I want more choices. But since I don't have more choices, I'm kind of stuck with the choices I have. Why don't you tell me the races that have piqued your interest, intrigued your curiosity, or otherwise stimulated your political sensibilities? What's going on? Oh, I like that. I should repeat that sometime. That was good.
I am glad how you introduced this section, because that's exactly the first thing I'm going to talk about today is more choices.
Oh my God, we're sick. We got a connection, Bill. We have a mind meld.
In Alaska, we have more choices. There, in the primary, they had a primary, of course, but in the general election, there are three Republicans running and one Democrat running in the general election. And that all comes down to the fact that there, in Alaska, you have the ranked voting.
Which is a stupid system, but it's produced an interesting result.
It has. And, even though right now the Trump-backed candidate, Tishkati, is leading Murkowski, by a couple points, most likely Murkowski will wind up winning that because of this ranked system. And this is a system that her dad put into place a long time ago.
Yeah, to keep her in.
To keep her in, yeah, basically, yeah.
It's the Rhino reform. And they say the Democrats fix all the elections, not in Alaska. No, this is definitely a fixing. This is a way that Republicans exclude real Republicans from getting an office like Sarah Palin. So I got a problem with it. Waited? Oh, please, give me a break. That's like open primaries.
Yeah.
Where Democrats can vote in Republican primaries. Well, that's not a primary. That's a general election by a different name.
Correct. And Murkowski, even though she is a registered Republican, ran as a Republican, has won as a Republican, Governor GovTrack.com kind of tracks everybody's the way they vote and kind of ranks them accordingly. Murkowski is actually ranked further left than Democrat Manchin from West Virginia.
Oh, I would say a good 10 to 12 senators would be ranked left of Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema, the same kind of thing. So that's where the parties get blurry. It's really interesting that, and of course we have to talk about Tulsi Gabbard, what just happened yesterday. That's quite fascinating too. But yeah, you can't stick by the labels because, the really bad rhinos, the Susan Collins, the Liz Cheney's, I've forgotten the other guy's name that cries a lot. And you've got the other Mitt Romney, they're not Republicans. They are there for the sole purpose of destroying, America First Republicans. That's their job. That's why Mitt Romney was the only moderate who could beat Barack Obama. John McCain was the only moderate, who could beat Barack Obama. And Jeb Bush was the only moderate who could beat Hillary Clinton. I mean, that was the way it was supposed to go. They're all supposed to lose.
Well, yeah, and the establishment inside the Republican Party has said over and over again that that Trump candidates are toxic and they can't win in a general election. but yet here we are at the very first race that we're talking about in Alaska, and you got a Trump guy leading over Democrat and over an establishment Republican. So it is very possible that Kelly Tishkati.
I think it's like shiitake. I think it's like Japanese cuisine.
Shiitake.
That's how it's pronounced.
Okay.
It's something like that. I know it's close to food,
like
that's how I remember it. Okay.
Yeah. The T S back. It is T S H I B A K A.
Yeah, her. She's good. She's got good stance. She's America First. She's she's a patriot. She's not a transgender Democrat.
No, she's not, and so that's really good. Now I want to shift gears here, come further south down to Colorado. Colorado has turned totally Democrat, but this kind of gives you an idea of what we're dealing with here. These next two that we want to discuss here, Colorado sent out 30,000 ballots to non-citizens.
You mean illegals?
Who are not illegals? Yes.
Yeah.
Who?
Yeah. Well, are they illegally in the country?
It could be It could be people who don't even who are not registered in the state of Colorado also.
So give me the act on this, because this does make a difference, whether they sent out to permanent residents, you know, green card holders, which can't vote. I know, because I couldn't vote when I had a green card,
right,
until I became a citizen. That was at 21, so I could vote at 18, but I couldn't vote at 18 because I wasn't a citizen. And that was in New England, too. They actually honored the law there for a while. I don't know what they do now. But is it who they exactly did they send these 30,000 ballots out to? And why did they do it?
Okay.
And who did it?
So, obviously the supervisor of elections did it. They did not specify if it was all illegals, part illegals. They just grouped it all together. When they group it all together like that, I'm assuming that most of it is probably illegals. But then you also had some that were not registered citizens in the state of Colorado. So maybe they just moved there recently, but they have not changed their voter registration over.
So that
gives them the possibility of voting in stock twice. Which, you know, that wouldn't be the first time that someone from Colorado has voted twice. Back in, I think it was 2016, there's a well-documented person who went on the news, said, yeah, I voted in Ohio in the morning and I flew to Colorado and voted for Hillary in the afternoon.
Now, that would be the majority, but a lot of people, if they're mailed ballots, like California mails you a ballot wherever you are. The idea that California would mail ballots out of state that aren't, you know, bona fide absentee ballots, they're just mailing anybody on the voter rolls out of state, you know, ballots. That's you know, that election should be voided, whoever it is. All the California votes should be taken out because you can't trust it. Once it's tainted, I mean, they throw out searches when they're tainted. They throw out evidence when it's tainted. You know, you have to throw out an entire state or county if the ballots are tainted. If you can't ascertain which ones are the real ones and which ones are the fraud, then you got to throw it all out. And they don't.
Correct. And then the Supreme Court just did a ruling this week in Pennsylvania, and I think this is going to be really telling what's going to happen going forward here, especially in Pennsylvania itself. The Supreme Court ruled 6-3 in favor of a Republican judge. First of all, I have a problem with the fact that the judge is labeled Republican, because most judge races should be nonpartisan. So I have a problem with that.
That was done for a reason.
Well, of course it was. But what it was is that the judge was challenging the fact that there was 257 ballots that did not have the date on the ballot. And according to Pennsylvania law, you must have the date that you mailed the ballot in must be on the ballot itself. That is
wasn't
a law.
It post office stamped or no? I mean, post office stamps everything with the date.
Well, they do, but the Pennsylvania law is very specific that the ballot itself must have the date on it.
Okay, well that makes sense. So it's not posted.
Okay,
it's not an after the election ballot that got snuck in and counted in a recount or something like that.
He only lost by 5 votes.
Oh Jesus! Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, so those absentee ballots, you know, he challenged it. The Third Circuit Court out of Philadelphia, which is very liberal, said that the date matter. Of course, as we know from Pennsylvania and many other states, they don't care about dates as long as they count ballots in favor of their own people. And when that ruling was made, of course, the liberals were jumping up and down, saying, you know, praising the court system. But now that the Supreme Court says, no, the law of the law of Pennsylvania states you must have a ballot, so those ballots must be thrown out, now the far leftists are losing their absolute mind once again, saying the Supreme Court should be thrown out and that judges shouldn't be involved with this and that this is a violation of the Civil Rights Act. And that's where they're going with this whole thing. That's the violation of the Civil Rights Act, which does state that
the vote didn't
any
go
irrelevant
their way.
Basically, yeah. But the Civil Rights Act does cover the whole ballot in voting, saying that you can't throw a ballot out based on immaterial. And immaterial would be like race, gender, color, that sort of thing.
Well, it shouldn't be on the ballot anyway. You know, if we want to get past the racism, you know, in government, then there shouldn't be racial classifications on your ballot. You know, they just have your name
it was part of the Civil Rights Act, which started off the whole thing, you know, in the South when they were banning black people from voting to begin with. So that's why I got thrown in.
You mean
and
the
so
Democrats
now,
were.
Of course, liberals, Democrats doing what they do is trying to expand it further out to make sure that their guy gets in as a judge instead of the right person. Mm-hmm. So that's what this is all about. But with that being said, we have an issue down in South Florida with Hurricane Ian that has totally leveled a heavy Republican area, Fort Myers and whatnot. And they're going to have to start relying on mail-in ballots and trying to get ballots to people. The state of Florida did a great job after Hurricane Michael hit Panama City a few years ago, where they set up kind of a tent for people to go vote in. So we'll probably end up seeing the same thing down in Fort Myers if those people are even there. And that's always the biggest problem in itself.
Have people still evacuated? Are they still clear? Have they not gone back to the area because the roads are still all sand, or what's going on? I mean, I've seen some pretty horrendous pictures from down there.
Governor DeSantis has done a great job. He actually got a bridge built out to Sanibel Island within a week. Wow. Normal government can't do that within 10 years.
He's not in the government. This is a huge thing for him.
It is. And so he's done a great job, as far as that goes. And I'm expecting the people who are still in Florida to vote. It would be interesting to see how many we do get in Florida, down in that area, counted votes. But once again, if we start talking about mail-in voting, who knows what's going to happen as far as that goes. Thank goodness it is a Republican area with a Republican supervisor of election, so we should see less corruption than we normally would.
But it's also it's a midterm. It's not a presidential race, so it's not a national election. It's statewide for senators, but I think the only senator running from Florida is Rubio. I think Rick Scott's still in the middle of his term. So we're talking one Senate race, and as far as the House races, those are all congressional districts. So whatever congressional district is representative, I think that's Brian Donald or Donalds. I'm not sure how to pronounce
it,
or Byron.
Yes,
Byron
is.
Donalds.
But
he's really popular. He's really popular, so I don't think he'll have trouble getting reelected.
But we have a governor race that's going to rely on a Republican area to carry. Right now, obviously, DeSantis has a 10-point lead. If you take out every single vote though from that area, it gets really, really close. He needs those voters to vote.
Well, do they postpone in case of emergency? What are the provisions or something like that? Or can those people vote late, like a week or two later or something? Or I'm sure there are provisions for an emergency like this.
I don't know the exact provisions, but with it being so far out still, I think it's the duty of the state to really accommodate them at this point, even though I'm sure this is the last thing that they're thinking of.
Really key. No, I think getting absentee ballots to the residents of Fort Myers is critical. And I'm not a big absentee ballot fan.
I'm talking about the voters themselves. The voters are probably more concerned about getting back in their house than voting in the election, unless they're really passionate voters, and they always find a way to vote one way or another.
Yeah, they'll drag themselves across broken glass to vote. I know people like that. I'm one of them.
Exactly. Exactly. Very interesting article that came out today, FloridaPolitics.com, which is a far left website, online newspaper, or whatever you want to call it. But it's basically a pay for play. If you're a Republican, you got pay to play to get onto that site to get any advertisement at all. Otherwise, they don't push you at all. But it's usually far left.
We should do more liberal reporting. I think it'd be kind of interesting. I'm trying to get more liberals on the show just because I want to talk to them. But what did you find?
So they came out and said that real clear politics is one of the best polling sites out there. And that they actually came up, they did a study over the last 10 years of polls and results and found out polls favored Democrats by 5.9 points.
Well, yeah, because they asked more Democrats in the polls than Republicans. Although the liberal polling agencies will poll, 65% Democrat, 45% Republican and call it a fair poll. It's kind of funny, actually.
Right. So if you take that into consideration, you're talking about a landslide in the Senate, a landslide in the House, based upon the numbers we're about to go over right here. Republicans.
Well, but that makes sense, though, because first of all, we know Brandon stole the election. But even people that don't know that, nobody would vote for. And here's the weird thing, too. Brandon said he was going to do that. He said he was going to cut the oil pipeline. He said he was going to get rid of the wall. He said he was going to, spend like crazy. So there's no surprises for me. So these people that say, well, he was going to be a moderate and he was going to bring the country together. I don't know where the hell they got that from, because I never heard that message at all. So I think they're making it up. But nothing. But this is all expected. Everything he's doing is expected. We all knew he was going to do it. And people who knew he was going to do it knew that, where we are now, they never want those policies anyway. So there's a lot of Democrats that don't want to pay high gas. A lot of Democrats that don't want to have their kids lose a job to an illegal. They don't want to have their family members killed by an illegal. They don't want to have no foreign policy. They don't want to have rampant inflation. They don't want to have all the things we have now, because nobody would vote for these policies except a small percentage of Marxists, what, 10? Maybe 15% of the country actually favors what's going on, because they're like, yeah, bring it down, man. Let's get, yeah, Marxism, let's go. We'll power of the people. No, give me a break. But anyway, so who would actually vote for this? I mean, the big question to me is not whether Republicans are going to win in November. I think they are. They're going to win in a huge landslide. So I agree with you. The poll makes sense. My problem with Republicans is what they're going to do with the victory. Are they going to give it away? Are they going to put McCarthy in, who's going to be the new Paul Ryan? Are they going to say, well, we can't do anything because, you know, Brandon's still in the White House, so we'll come back and we'll get him next time, come back in 2 years. So vote for us and donate money. That's my big fear with Republicans. Bill?
Well, yeah, and looking at the guys who are in this race right now, the Republicans have pulled out of New Hampshire. They're down by 17 points there. They're not going to do anything there. So New Hampshire is still locked in for the Democrats. But now you have Vance in Ohio. Vance, I reported last week. This week, the Republican Vance is up by 3 points over Ryan. And then if you take the 5.9 in consideration, Vance has a pretty big lead. In Wisconsin, Johnson has a 2-point lead over Barnes, which is pretty good. But then you got the Democrat. Who is leading the governor race by 1.5 points. So I always find that interesting how in the Senate race you have one party leading, but then in the governor race the other party's leading. I always find it kind of interesting.
Well, how much is personality and how much is party? I mean, are people still loyal to party as much as they used to be, or are they more loyal to personality? I think of the switch. Used to be, if you're a Democrat, if you're in a union, you voted Democrat. Come hell or high water, it didn't matter who was on the Democrat ticket, you were a Democrat, that's how you voted. Or if you were from a good old party of good old family, good old, Republican, GOP, grand old party people, you'd vote Republicans. That's American, voting for Republican. I don't think it's that way anymore. I don't think the kids, the younger voters have the allegiance to party like their parents and grandparents, especially their grandparents did.
Well, definitely not the younger ones. They're more influenced on celebrity status, obviously, and more of them are independent because of that. So the independent vote's going to be really interesting. Some of them want to be independent just because they like the stigma of being independent, but they're really Democrat or Republican.
Well, it's not a stigma, I think a lot of people, because they don't like the two-party system. Now, if I understand it right, as far as party registration goes, the independents, the ones that have not registered Democrat or Republican, is larger than the combination of Democrats and Republicans, isn't it?
Correct.
So it's the largest party, but they're not organized.
It's like a large party, but the majority of them don't vote to begin with.
Oh, that's interesting. So they're lazy independents.
They're
independent of the political system. They're not just independent of parties. They're independent of the whole thing.
So Wisconsin's going to be one to watch. And then Arizona, you got Lake and Hobbs at the governor race, which is now dead even. To me, it just seems like Lake should be way ahead at this point. But then you got the Democrat Kelly, who's leading by 7 points over Masters on the Senate side.
I don't believe that either. Not after that last debate. That doesn't make sense.
Well, this was actually before the debate. They haven't done a new poll. This poll was done right after we talked last week. So I think it was last Friday.
Yeah.
So it should be kind of interesting. You still have Warnick ahead of Walker in most of the polls, same as last week, up by 4. But Walker is still leading. Yeah, I don't either, because like I said last week, Walker is ahead in the Atlanta Constitution poll, which is the newspaper, which is definitely far left. he's ahead by 4 points in Atlanta. So if he's ahead in 4 points in Atlanta, he should be ahead at least by 1 or 2 points overall.
Go ahead. I was just thinking of a question. You know, we know the Democrats stole the election, and we know the Republicans let them. So if a party is willing to steal an election, why wouldn't they fudge the poll results for the same purpose? I mean, it seems to me it's all part of the same system, that the polls really are meaningless. The really good ones are the internal polls of the candidates themselves. We're not going to get to see those because those are the internal polls. So why would they do internal polls if the external polls were accurate? So the fact that they do internal polls kind of proves that these public polls are not accurate at all. They are designed for a particular purpose, which, depending on who's sponsoring it, is to influence the vote. They're not designed to report where people stand at any one time. And it doesn't matter where people stand before the election. You know, you either like a candidate or you don't. Right. So the whole idea of polls is kind of crazy to me just because all it can do is sway people who want to be, you know, with the winner. So you declare somebody the winner who may not be the winner. People vote for the winner thinking that they're the winner because they want to be with the winner, and the loser wins. That's no good.
Well, that's why I led with the story about the 5.9 swing, because, mm-hmm. you know, when I mentioned these numbers, so you mentioned Vance at 3 points, so it should be 8 points. Johnson, yeah. 2 points, should be 7 points. She's losing by 2 points. You know, and then you got Kemp, which I was kind of surprised to see this one. Kemp is up by 6 over Abrams, because everything
it's because Abrams is terrible. Nobody wants her as governor.
Well, she is terrible. I mean, she's beyond terrible. But uh-huh. everything that you I mean, it's just the propaganda that has been built up so much. I thought that the poll would be a little bit closer, but I guess people just aren't buying the propaganda.
Well, they remember her last time. So that's, you know, they don't want her as governor. They don't want to be a slave horrible. To the Democrat Party. You know, they don't want Chicago and Atlanta. They're close enough right now.
I'll say they're close enough as it is.
Yeah. So, but here's the interesting question. Okay. I want to get to Tulsi Gabbard before you go, so I'll make sure to get that in.
Yeah. Yeah, so Pennsylvania, Dr. Oz has cut the 2 points. So really he's probably ahead by 3 points at this point. So this is a good one. In the state of Washington, liberal Washington, mm-hmm. Murray has had as high as a 13-point lead. He's a Democrat. But Smiley has actually cut it down to 2 points. So this is kind of interesting to see this state of Washington unfold. And Nevada. Nevada's governor race, it's a 1-point advantage right now for the Democrats. So that's going to be kind of interesting in itself.
How is this even possible? You know, the Democrats, you figure you've got Trump versus Brandon. You've got polar opposites because Brandon basically reversed illegally, of course, everything that Trump did. So you're either for or against high gas prices. You're either for or against plentiful energy supplies. You're either for or against a border wall and illegal aliens. You're either for or against a good foreign policy. You're either for or against, you know, nuclear missiles being shot from North Korea. There's no – how can these things be that close when these issues are so diametrically opposed? That doesn't
make sense to me. Because you have a mental illness that is called liberalism that truly, truly believes that everything is happening right now because of Donald Trump. And nothing is Biden's fault, that Biden is fixing all the problems and everything that is happening right now is because of Donald Trump.
That's irrational.
They believe it in all their heart. They believe that the Republican Party is causing all this. I mean, hell, there was a – I did the poll a couple weeks ago where mm-hmm. I think it was like 20% thought that DeSantis was responsible for the gas prices being higher. I mean, he has nothing to do with gas prices being higher.
Well, yeah, exactly.
I mean,
yeah. But this doesn't make sense, though, because weren't they awake?
Weren't they awake during
the Trump administration?
They're just – liberalism is dumb. Both sides of the extreme, the Republican mm-hmm. extreme, the Democrat extreme, are dumb. They are dumb.
I'm not
afraid to say it, and they both sides come after me if they want. But both sides need to wake up that extremism is not the way that you get this country fixed.
Yeah, but the middle isn't the way either. You know, I mean, I'm a Goldwater fan. You know, what did he say? Extremism, you know, is no vice. You know, I forgot what the quote is, but it's something like, you know, and moderation is no virtue, you know, by itself. Let me get the quote up because it's really good. But the fact that it's moderation, being in the center, is not a virtuous position. if you're between, you know, there's nothing wrong with a strong position if that strong position is what's required. You know, what do you moderate on energy prices? Well, I don't want them too high or too low. I want my prices in the middle. Okay, $3.50. You know, I mean, between $1.85 and $4.50, you know, what or $5, what's your middle? I mean, that doesn't make sense. You know, everybody thinks centrist is good or bipartisan is good. That just means the generic middle, but that's not necessarily a position.
No, well, I mean, you do have a position. Like, what I mean by extremism, I'm talking about these people who are just blind to the normal facts. You know, liberalism is, the far left has just gone off the deep end. That's why Tulsi Gabbard has left. She has left she claims she's leaving the Democrat Party. I don't see her actually unregistering as a Democrat. She may say this out loud, but how many people have said they left the Democrat or Republican Party but are still registered in that party? The one thing I don't want to see, and I'm really getting sick and tired of these quote-unquote conservatives who are just drooling over her, because at the end of the day, she is still a leftist. Okay, she believes in abortion. She believes in gun control. She believes in socialism. I mean, she is not – I don't want to see her in this Republican Party. I don't want to see her at CPAC anymore, and I don't want to see her at Fox News.
Okay.
Which I don't anyway because I don't watch Fox
News. See, I do like her, though. And I haven't heard her extreme views. I haven't heard her abortion views and things like that. But abortion is such a huge range. There's, like, those that say, you know, like, immediately, like a morning after pill as opposed to, you know 5 minutes before birth. I mean, there's such a range in there. You know, abortion is abortion. But I think a lot of people see shades of big differences, you know, between that. I don't know her welfare stance. I'd be curious to see, you know, how much government, you know, she wants in her solutions. But I did find something really interesting just before you go. This is the New York Post. I'm going to go over this article later. It says Gabbard did not say in her message, this is a big tweet that went out, whether she would join the Republican Party, register as a political independent, or join or start a third party. She spoke in February to the Conservative Political Action Network, that's what you're talking about with CPAC a little bit, in which she called for unity and deplored the, quote, power elites who are eroding individual rights. So this is the part that I was trying to investigate, and it took a lot of time this morning to try and find, but I can't find anything. But she has not registered as a Republican. So all the Republicans that say, oh, we welcome you to the party, and just because she left the Democrats doesn't mean she's going to become a Republican. In fact, since she's not running for office – there's no benefit to becoming a Republican. She might as well be an independent. That way she can criticize everybody like we do.
No, and a lot of her views are more libertarian views to begin with. Obviously, the anti-war stance, the pro-marijuana stance, those are more libertarian. As far as the abortion thing goes, libertarians are kind of split down the middle as far as that goes, depending on which libertarian you want to talk to. Obviously the gun control thing, but, you know, the big thing about her was that her parents were far right wingers. And she got, when she ran.
You mean conservatives,
in Hawaii,
America Firsters? We need correct terminology here.
Well, you know, this is before the American First thing came out. I mean, but when she was running years and years ago before Donald Trump ran for office, you know, she came out and apologized and threw her parents under the bus for being right-wingers.
She's just a rebellious kid. We know how that goes. My parents were ardent socialists, and look at me. I mean, I came from an ultra-socialist, feminist, radical Marxist family, you know.
Are you going to go on public stage and apologize for your parents' point of view?
No. That was their point of view. It had nothing
did.
To do with me. Yeah.
She
okay.
did. She, you know, she so apologized would, for them being Republicans. So this is not a good person. This is like the political view, the political version of Meghan Markle. How about that? Look at me. I want to be special. She's got the same crazy eyes as Meghan Markle.
But Meghan Markle never served in the military, and Meghan Markle never did anything for our country. Meghan Markle's done everything for herself. I mean, she's a great actress. I loved her in the TV show Suits. Was that
Suits?
Cool?
Oh, yeah.
Suits was
very sexy in that.
Yeah, so you have one lawyer who's a criminal. You have another one who's almost a criminal. You know, you got an entire law firm of everybody's trying for power. I mean, that was like Washington. That was you know, both corporate America and Washington all in the same, truly decadent, power-hungry show, but it was incredibly well-written. I love that show. Is it gone? It's really too bad.
Oh, it's been gone for a while. I just got done watching it. It's on Amazon Prime or Freevee, it's called now, Freevee.
Is Freevee free?
Yeah, it is free. Yeah, if you have Amazon Prime, it's free.
I don't have that. Well, I don't have Amazon Prime, so it's not free for me.
I finished it up earlier this year, was it 7-9 seasons, something like that. It ran probably about two seasons too long, like every show does. But
yeah, it doesn't get crazy. It's like Castle, one of my favorite shows, you know, because I love Stana Katic. I forgot what her name is. She was just fabulous on the show. But it was like one of those, you know, romantic comedy cop shows. Remember Moonlighting? We're really digressing.
We haven't done a
TV talk thing for a while. But Moonlighting, remember Bruce Willis and what was his name? Sybil Shepherd. There we go. Yeah.
See, that's
how Bruce Willis got his start. He had hair. He drove in a Volkswagen. That was a romantic comedy cop show. Some of those series, you know, like that were fabulous. Remington Steele with Ephraim Zimbalist Jr.'s daughter, Amy Zimbalist. What was her name? Anyway,
I don't remember her name.
Yeah.
I barely remember
Gorgeous.
That show. I didn't watch that that often.
Well, I just think it's funny. You combine romantic comedy and cop shows. You get a really good combination. And the last one was Castle. I don't think we have another one after that. But trial shows. Remember L.A. Law? That was a good one. Boston Legal.
Law and Order, L.A. Law. I mean, all of those have lasted, you know, for so long.
Law and Order is different. It's got cops in it.
I mean, it's kind of a half and half type of show.
I like trial shows. And what was that Boston one? Not Boston Legal, but the other one, the one before it.
Yeah, Boston.
The Practice.
The Practice, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
But,
that's like trial film.
Yeah, all those shows, you know, they all have an expiration date on them because you can only do so much with them. You know,
I know.
You can only create so much drama for every single trial that you're part of. And I always question, if you have this much drama, you know, going back to Suits for a second, is Wendy on, by the way, or is she not coming on today?
Wendy's not feeling too well, so we're going to give her another week to rest, recoup, and get her voice back and be her normal, sprightly, giggling self.
Okay. So going back to Suits, for example, if I was Jessica, who is the head of the law firm, I would have fired everyone, every single person inside that place.
Yeah,
I would have fired.
There's not a single lovable character in that show. I mean, there really isn't.
I mean,
they're all crooked one way or another.
The show should have lasted maybe three episodes, and everyone should have been fired. I mean,
how about a movie?
Because that does not happen in the real world. I mean, it just doesn't happen that way in the real world.
It is a TV show, after all.
Well, it is a TV show, and it was self-made drama that didn't need to be. Harvey Specter, who I love that Harvey Specter character. I love his mentality. I love everything about that man.
You want to be Harvey Specter. You want to be that high-power lawyer in that suit. I know you. You want to be in the business world.
I don't want to be the high-powered lawyer. I want to be that high-powered brain.
Oh, okay.
You know, you have
no.
ADHD.
It's not me.
He is very focused.
I'm very focused too. On 15 things at once.
Very
What's the problem? Very
driven. He's very focused. Very driven. And once he gets something in his eye, he captures that no matter what. And I hope people who are listening know what we're talking about here. Otherwise, we're rambling on for no reason at all. But
anyway. It's fine. And here's the thing. What do you think of thinking about? You know, because we go to some very interesting places. You know, South Korea, Azerbaijan, New Zealand, you know, Iceland. I wonder what people are thinking about when they listen to us in some of these other countries. Because I don't think, especially, you know, Thailand. I mean, what are they thinking in Thailand when we're talking? I don't know. I mean, it's just, these are curiosities. This is what we have live chat. So, by the way, folks, the live chat is open. If you're listening live, you know, you can get us on live chat. Just go to the bottom of your broadcast page. We also have a Skype line, so you can call us from anywhere in the world. And a few people have taken advantage of that, but more will as the show explodes onto the national and international scene. But we just keep doing what we're doing. But, you know, you wonder about, you know, it's interesting, too. There's a little sideline here. I'm glad you have a few extra minutes. England, Australia, and Canada, those audiences are growing rapidly. The U.S. share of the show is dropping fast, and it's being picked up by the Commonwealth, countries. New Zealand, too,
to a smaller extent. That correctly.
What?
The U.S. listenership isn't dropping. The percentage
share.
Of total people listening.
The U.S. share is the number of listeners in the United States is always increasing, you know, and that's a good thing. but the share, you know, but the rest of the world is catching up, is you know, the share is changing, which I find interesting. It used to be about, you know, 95% U.S. Now it's like 88. That's a big difference.
It's a huge difference considering the numbers that we're pulling in. And that's really good because that means that people in Canada, people in England, in other Australia are kind of sick and tired of the parliamentary dictatorship that they're in. You know, when I was in Canada, I went and visited my wife's cousin. She's a dentist. And what I found interesting, okay, I know what you're thinking, and this is what I was thinking too, but when I started talking to her, there is an options for medical in Canada. It's not all 100% free. It is based upon income. And her dentistry, she has three tiers of people, very similar to here, where she volunteers and helps the extreme poor, the ones who don't, you know, some of the immigrants who just came into the country or whatever, she'll help them. But she only takes a couple of them. Then there's your Medicaid people, you know, the ones who get the free insurance.
Right.
She tries to help them. And then, but there's also other people who do pay for their own insurance. And that's the one that she really
focused on. Is it private insurance? We're talking about private insurance,
It's private insurance. So there is still that option, at least on the dental side. I didn't get into the medical side. You know, but it was refreshing, even though they were kind of brainwashed a little bit by this whole COVID thing, which a lot of people in America were too. They definitely don't like Biden. They don't like the fact that they see all these illegals coming into our country, even though because in Canada, they actually welcome people in anyways. They're taking in a lot of Ukrainians.
Well, they've got more land. You know, I mean, you got the tundra, man. You can go up north in Canada. There's plenty of room for people.
True.
You know, just put the illegals up north. Just keep going north, illegals. Just keep going north. Go up with the polar bears.
Well,
you know, have fun.
Like I told you last week, Toronto is only 47% white, and the rest is Asian and Middle Easterner. So now you're going to throw in Ukrainians into the mix. Syrians, you're going to throw into the mix.
Yeah,
and then
white.
You're going to start seeing, and
but they're not Canadian.
So you're going to start seeing more and more of a mixture in Canada, where it's no longer going to be that the typical French or English.
Yeah, it's interesting too. On the West Coast, when the British lost their lease to Hong Kong, an awful lot of folks from Hong Kong got out when the going was good. They were smart, and they populated the West Coast from San Diego to Vancouver, British Columbia. And a lot of Hong Kong folks, because they're a British Commonwealth, found it very easy to get into Vancouver. And so there's a very large Asian, you know, Hong Kong population that has now taken up residence in Vancouver, which makes a lot of sense. It's colder. But Canada, when I was a kid in Canada, I would say I didn't remember seeing people of other colors. I mean, everybody was white. We didn't think about it. And in Australia, I had all kinds of different, you know, races, and I didn't think about that either. It was kind of interesting. I had no concept of race until I came to the United States. So whether I was in an all-white country or apparently, you know, almost all-white, or I was in a country that had Aborigines, Maoris, Pacific Islanders, you know, Asian folks, and every other color you can think of. I think I said Aborigine. Anyway, that didn't register either. So, I mean, I've always been comfortable either, you know, with one race or with a bunch of races. It never occurred to me that there's such a thing as a race until I got here, which is really interesting. So I always look at the racial, you know, whole idea differently than I think a lot of people, unless you have my experience, which would be very few people, you know, grew up in three different countries.
Correct. Yeah, and I think that's where we really run into the problem here in America, is that we are American-centric. We are kind of egotistic when it comes to America, and we think that we're much better than every other country. But when it does come to race relations, we're pretty stupid.
Most countries think they're better. Australians think they're better. I mean, Canadians think they're better. Well, maybe
no,
not.
What I mean by, yeah, I know.
But Americans
particularly. But they still look at it differently. They still look at it differently. They still look at America as the powerhouse, where we don't look around and say, oh, someone's doing this better than us. No, we're the best. But what it comes down to is that we are stupid, and we've gotten lazy because we have been the best for so long. And our thinking is, and then we have allowed political parties, we've allowed news to manipulate us into thinking race is important and it's a thing. And
yeah,
really
that's weird.
Is.
I never grew up with that. There's a guilt trip here that is huge. You know, whites feel guilty and blacks feel empowered to use racism against, you know, whites. And it's a fascinating dynamic that I don't take any, you know, when someone looks at me and says, you're a white oppressor, you know, you're a slave owner. I said, what are you talking about? I mean, I don't take any responsibility for that. I don't accept it. So I'm kind of immune to a lot of that. This is why I can talk about race differently than a lot of folks in this country. But I don't have any white guilt because it has nothing to do with me. I never did. The only association
right.
is I'm white.
I'm the same
but
way.
Other than that, I don't feel any of that guilt, that attachment to this whole, you know, American slave racial issue. I'm just not a part of it.
Yeah, and, you know, my family came over here after the Civil War, and they mm-hmm. they lived up north. So, you know, I have no attachment to slavery whatsoever.
Yeah, the Fetzky from Germany, yeah.
Yes, we are. We're from Germany.
Okay. Do you
I,
know which part?
And but yeah, right at the Polish border.
Okay. Do you have Polish folks in your family? Did you cross over the border back and forth? Because the Polish border keeps moving. Every time somebody invades, the Polish border moves.
Yeah, I know.
Back and forth.
But no, this is... Their original Polish border. How about that?
Okay. Well, you're in Chicago, yeah. So you were covered for both German and Polish. I mean, I think they have fairly large populations of both, right?
Oh, huge. And then, you know, I'm also a little bit part Irish, too. So, you know, so mm-hmm. I had all three covered in Chicago. So,
so I should call you Ofetki?
Oh,
well,
sure.
Ofetki. It's William Ofetki. Well, he's got a bit of the Irish in him.
Well, you say that, but there is actually a very famous doctor in Berlin. His name is William, middle initial O, last name is Fetke.
But he's not Irish, though, otherwise he'd be Ofetki.
Correct, with the apostrophe.
Exactly, yeah. You know, you speak with an Irish-German accent. That'd be interesting. Oh, sure, I'll have some Guinness with my sauerbraten. It'd be a great morning. Glasgow.
But going back to what we're talking about with the race relations is, I mean, it's been used. It's been used to manipulate people. Is what it's all it's been doing. And it's been used in order to cause distraction. It's been used to bring America down is what it's done. Because we're so worried about black and white that we're not worried about the fact that we have a bunch of white people in Washington, D.C. who are stealing our money every single day and destroying our economy.
Well, that's why they do it.
And destroying America.
They play on the emotions of people because it works. Play on the emotions of black Americans to say you're a victim. And, you know, whitey took everything from you. And they play on the emotions of white people saying you're an oppressor. You got to give everything back. Neither of which is true. You know, it's a bunch of nonsense. But it's interesting because they came to this country as a young teenager, you know, and I walked into busing. I mean, I got involved I was there in Boston after Judge Garrity ordered busing. So all these kids from the inner city, it was the Metco program. So you have black kids from, you know, inner city Boston, Roxbury, places like that, coming out to really white Lexington where I, you know, my folks decided to settle for a while. And it was fascinating. I'm like looking around, you know, all I saw was Americans. I've told this story before. I'm looking at black Americans and white Americans. And all I see are Americans. I'm the minority, right? I'm looking at these people. I'm the one with the accent. I'm the one who talks differently. You know, I'm the aberration. I wasn't even, you know, part of this country. And I'm watching this. I'm looking around going, this is a really strange country. You know, everybody hates each other. You know, this is not a normal place. I mean, I, you know, really did not have a good time when I first came here. You know, walking into that kind of a political situation because people, you know, the black kids didn't like me because I was white. The white kids didn't like me because I was Australian. I couldn't win at all. I was a minority of one. So well, this is when you know, especially again, a political argument or a race argument, people they say, well, you're white. You don't know what it's like to be a minority. I'm like, well, let me tell you a story. I know exactly what it's like to be a minority, much more so than most minorities know what it's like to be a minority. I still remember when I was 16 going for a job at the local airport and the manager, because affirmative action came in, right? This is the first year of affirmative action, says to me point blank, I can't hire you because you're white. And I'm like, oh, racial discrimination. Yeah, now I see what it's like. So I know that too.
Yep.
You know, so all these folks say I don't have this experience because I'm a white person. I got news for you. And I think, and I'm not the only one. I don't think I'm unique in this at all. You know, there's a ton of people. Affirmative action has discriminated against tons of white people who I think it's time for reparations. I mean, it's the only way to go. You know, so you want to talk about equity? Give me some equity. I want my 16-year-old income plus. I want my 16-year-old job income, you know, from Massport, the Massachusetts Port Authority, plus interest. Let me see. I was 16 then. I'm over 60 now. And 50 years of, you know, 40s. Yeah, that's a lot of interest compounded. Yeah, they owe me a lot of money.
they owe you a lot of money. But Greg, I gotta go in, and I have a dentist who's gonna drill me for a while, so I gotta
drill, baby, drill.
Yeah, what a great sound that is.
Sorry.
So what is the worst sound? The sound of a dentist drilling, or
yes.
Hillary Clinton?
Well, that's we should ponder that one. See, I've always said that Hillary, men hate Hillary Clinton because she sounds like our craziest ex. You know, and even when she's talking calmly and coolly, you know she hates you. You know, so men will not vote for Hillary Clinton. I've said that before. Women get really upset with that. Men won't vote for Hillary Clinton. I'll tell you right now, she's not going to win. She's not going to get the guy's vote because our crazy ex-wives or our crazy ex-girlfriends all sound like Hillary Clinton. She's not going to win.
Yep.
It ain't going to happen. Men won't vote for Hillary. I don't know why she's going to run, but I guess she thinks she can, you know, talk her way around that. Ain't going to happen. Men don't vote for wimpy guys, too. They won't vote for Mitt Romney either. You know, although I did, you know, only because I thought Obama was such a danger to this country. It's the only reason. I wish I voted Libertarian. I voted Libertarian when Bush was running. But I should have voted Libertarian when Romney was running just because I knew he was I was in California. It didn't really matter. He's got a great.
No,
it didn't. All right. Listen, you got to go. Have fun at the dentist. Try singing, you know, like Wagner operas. You know, while you're in the chair.
All
freak
right.
him out.
You have a good day.
Dun 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 dun. Oh wait, here's some music to put in your head for your dentist. Listen to this.
All right.
Just sing that in your head, Bill. You can do it, Bill. Think of the cannons going off.
All right, we'll talk next week.
The Napoleonic charge. Bye, Bill. We needed the cannon shots and everything else to go along with that, but Josie's online. I'll get to you in just a minute. Here at Action Radio, we are looking for sponsors. We have 30 and 60-second spots available for your announcements, and we have 3-minute live call-ins to talk about your products and services available. Action Radio is the next evolution beyond talk radio. Join us and let us help your business evolve. Think about being a sponsor of the future and not just a listener, and help us help your business grow as you help us plunge headlong into breaking new ground here on Action Radio every day. Hello, this is Greg Penglis for our newest shooting range here in Milton, Florida. Stand Your Ground. My friend Jason Myers and crew are creating an incredible facility for our city. Stand Your Ground is located at 6632 Elba Street. The phone number is 850-789-1776. Their email is standyourground1776@gmail.com. Here you'll find either in process or already going an indoor shooting range, axe throwing, archery, a rage room, self-defense classes, concealed carry weapons classes, security license training, paintball, a full-service gun store, and 24/7 online ordering. So come on down or contact them by phone, email, or website and learn how you can best stand your ground. Do you know your way around healthcare, insurance, pharmacies, surgery, alternative treatments, and choices? I don't. Which is why I'm so glad I met Priscilla Romans, had her on Action Radio, and learned about health patient advocacy. She is the founder of Great Care. And now as an affiliate of Great Care, we are proud to offer through our discount code, WYL, which stands for Write Your Laws, a 10% discount. Great Care saves you both time and money. They provide medical advocacy, consultation, advice, and recommendations nationwide.
Their website is gracecare.com. That's GRAITH care.com. You can email them at gracecare.adm@gmail.com or call them at 469-864-7149. That's 469-864-7149. Grace Care, better health through better knowledge and advocacy.
Action Radio, dedicated to fixing everything.
Let's bring Josie on here, and we're wide open today. Nobody's here. Everybody's gone. The Wine Weed Wellness Women left. Tom Stewart has ended incredible thing, and Wendy's not feeling well. So it was Bill and you. We're kind of open today. Okay. We were sort of improvising. Yeah.
No, I was calling because I never get to hear Bill. I usually oversleep on Wednesday since I go to bed late. So I was talking to him yesterday. He came to pick up his order, and I said, I'll wake up tomorrow to listen to you. So I did.
Oh, good. Well, that's fine. Well, you're welcome to talk to him if you get up early enough, and you can certainly call his show. Pianki usually calls.
Yeah, it's okay.
The last,
five,
10 minutes.
I didn't know he was going to go. So.
Yeah.
But
well, he's on 7 o'clock.
He's going to the dentist.
Yeah, apparently. That's why I was playing him music to put in his head so he could think about
that
while he's in the chair. Well, I'm going to get more. I got this whole sound effects thing, and so I'm going to get more of them just because I got to play these things more. And I'm going to start incorporating more into the show because it's fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I have my new
but
theme.
I used to be in dentistry for 9 years.
Oh, you should call Bill and say, hey, Bill, you know. So why do they make the drill sound so bad? I mean, you think after all this time.
I don't know, but I don't like the sound of. But then you get used to. I didn't like the injections. I used to kind of like turn my head, just give it to the doctor. I said, here.
You do it. Yeah. Well, and dentists have the highest suicide rate. It's interesting that nobody wakes
definitely.
Up and says, I want to go to the dentist. So people are there. I mean, you're there because you have to. You know, I mean, it's necessary because the alternative is worse, you know, when your teeth fall out and horrible pain and all that kind of stuff. I mean, I don't know how they did it, you know, 200 years ago. Of course, they ate different food and they're all dead by, you know, 35, 40 anyway. So it made a difference. You didn't have to worry about losing your teeth later in life because you didn't have later in life. So it was a whole different proposition. But yeah, you know, it's in life without that needle. You know, just drilling. I don't think so. Yeah, so it's I don't mind the modern. I'll take the needle. I get a pretty high pain tolerance apparently, so I don't have an issue with it really. Yeah, yeah.
And there's a lot of crooks dentistry doctors too. So I was working for a dentist in Georgia, and this dentist I was assisting him. I just came from working for one of the best professional dentist in Miami, you know, like, oh my God, he just retired, but he's one of the best. And so I started assisting him, and this 76-year-old woman, beautiful teeth she had for her age, actually. And this doctor, I was kind of new there like 3 weeks, and he started drilling in her mouth, and then he goes, oops, you're going to need a root canal. And I'm like, I'm giving him a dirty look like you did it to her. So he just went a little deep with a drill to do a root canal. But she really didn't need a root canal, this woman. And then
he should be in jail. I mean, that's malpractice.
Wait.
And it gets worse. Wow.
So I give him a dirty look. I said, excuse me, doctor, I have to go cough, which it was a lie.
Right.
I had a mask on. So I step into the lab and he followed me. And I told him, and you know, I was new there 3 weeks.
Right.
3 or a month or something like that. And I told him, I said, you better do that root canal for free or I'm going to tell her what you just did. And he's giving me a look like, he says, okay, I will. And he did the free root canal, but the older lady, she had to pay for the crown, because you have to have a crown after you do a root canal, because the tooth becomes very brittle, you know, once you get the nerve out. So, yeah, I just didn't like what he was doing, and it's very sad, and a lot of dentists do that. They get so close to the nerve, and then they push the drill, and that's it. You have to have a root canal. So
yeah, it's an interesting thing. I had an alcoholic dentist when I was a kid, and I didn't know it. I think, you know, Mommy Dearest knew it, and she kept sending me back because he had a weird smell to his breath, and I didn't know what that was because I'd never been around alcoholics or people that drank. You know, my folks drank, but they usually would, you know, come in late and sleep until 12 or 1 o'clock, so it was pretty much gone by then. But I thought, what's that weird smell? And then I got to college, and, of course, everybody's drunk in college, right? And I'm like, oh, damn. Now I know what that smell is. It's my dentist, right? But he drilled several of my teeth too much, and they have every either had the teeth that he drilled. And a lot of times he didn't use the Novocaine. He just drilled, right? I mean, it's painful. I mean, we're talking like almost like a torture thing. But it was like, well, this is the way it is. You know, you don't need, you know, we're not going to go that deep. And then he did go that deep. He used to give him the needle when he went that deep. But the point was I had to have two implants and another crown on teeth that he drilled because he drilled so much he just hollowed them out. You know, and I knew they were deep. I knew they were too deep, but, you know, I'm 15 years old. What are you going to do? You know, so later on in life, I had, you know, big fillings.
Did you say you had implants way back?
I think I had my first one in my 50s. But with the titanium screw and the whole bit, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but all those teeth, that I had implants.
We didn't have that back then.
No, this is fairly recent, but in other words, I had fillings crowns on these teeth because they were drilled too much when I was a teenager. There's no reason for it. So I understand. When you talk about dentists doing things, you know, medical cruelty like that, I just go crazy because I know exactly what it was like. I still remember being in that chair, you know, with Mr. Whiskey Breath, you know, drilling in my teeth. And the drilling, you know,
there's
it's an art.
There's a lot of bad dentists, a lot.
Yeah.
The first one that I worked for, I was learning dentistry and then went to do my classes and all that to get my license. And this dentist, he was a butcher. I thought that was dentistry. But the main thing on this is a lot of black children came to this dentist because he was in a black neighborhood. So this dentist he was cheating Medicaid. So one black family came, for example, with a card of Medicaid, and that little Medicaid card had about 4 or 5 kids, and he charged for everyone that everybody had a cleaning. And then he would put a filling on another one, and he was cheating and cheating and cheating, and the way he treated especially the black children was bad, you know? Like, he would do an extraction, and he will grab him by the head, and the kids were almost coming out of the chair. Like, you don't do that.
Nobody reported this guy? Nobody who worked for him reported him? Why was he still able to practice?
Well, this is what happened. I was kind of new in dentistry, learning, and I have never seen anything like it. And my husband walked in there to bring me lunch one day, and he noticed he has his whole arm locked in this young kid's head, and he goes, oh my God, what the heck is he doing? And he said, that's not dentistry. And, you know, my husband just started complaining. But anyway, it went on and on for a little while. And then I started complaining to him because he was allowing me for me to do everything except drilling and giving the injection. I did it all for him.
Wow.
I became almost like a dentist myself. Except for those two things, extraction and drilling. And anyway, so I warned him that I was going to tell his wife that he was doing all this cheating. And he goes, no, please don't tell my wife. And then two, three weeks later, he was at it again. He was addicted. He was waiting for that check to come every 2.5 weeks or whenever that Medicaid check came, a huge check. And, of course, he will take everybody for lunch all the time. And he said, here's my credit card if you want to go shopping.
Yeah, that's bribery.
When you go to the pharmacy and get supply, you can get anything you want and, you know, all this stuff to everybody.
Huh.
But I noticed he was cheating alphabetical order. He was doing everybody in A, everybody in B, you know, by last name.
Huh.
And one day, he stood right there by the door with a false teeth, which I hate the smell. I couldn't eat potato chip for years after I quit dentistry because the smell of potato chip, it smells just like denture. I couldn't stand the denture.
Oh.
But anyway,
that's interesting.
He's standing right there by the door, waiting for me to go do a reline on the denture, which that's his duty to do. The assistant is not supposed to do a reline on denture.
Right.
And anyway, so I mean, you send him to the lab and all that, but he wanted for me to take care of it, to do the impression and all that for the patient, to send him for reline. And I give him a look, and I'm already doing a bonding on a crown that this lady came that it fell. And I'm giving him a dirty look like, I'm already doing your job. I'm not going to do that. But anyway, and I was already upset because he's doing all this cheating, and I'm like, how am I going to get out of this one? And I really needed the job. But you know what? That day I walked out, and he was paying me good money because I was his right. Mm-hmm. And I walked out, and you know what? A week later, he was arrested. Yes. Medicaid fraud finally got to him.
Good.
He was arrested. Yes. And I was happy about it because I was sick and tired of seeing all this cheating. And a lot of doctors in the medical, they cheat with Medicaid like you would not believe.
No, I believe it. No, in fact, if we could audit Medicaid and the whole thing, well, and look at the cheating the government does with the whole COVID thing, and they were giving, you know, $130,000 per COVID death.
Absolutely.
So if you really want to reform, you know, it's not that healthcare is that expensive; it's that there are that many cheaters, and they're government cheaters and they're private cheaters, and
exactly.
You know, I mean, how many people suffered by my alcoholic dentist? I'm sure is long passed away, so I don't think I'm holding any secrets back here, but now fortunately I had really good dentists after that. So there are really good dentists out there too. And the ones I got were very lucky, but
I
was very suspicious. You know, I'll tell you another thing that's interesting too. My folks were, when I was a kid, when I was a teenager, I had a bad back and they were dead set against chiropractors. Don't go to chiropractors. They're quacks or this or that.
Oh,
of course
I
did my own research and I looked them up and what'd you say? I'm sorry.
I don't like chiropractors. Most of them are crooks.
Well, not the one I start with at 17. You know, he actually straightened my back out. Yeah. Well, that's fine. But it's interesting. This is why I had so many of our healing folks on. You know, our wild women of wellness who have also left the show. Everybody's left the show this week. I look into a lot of that stuff, and to me, whatever's appropriate. If chiropractic is appropriate over back surgery, I'm going to go for the chiropractic. I've never had back surgery, yet I've always had a bad back, yet now it's completely manageable. When they told me I'd be, you know, crippled and have, you know, hip replacements and knee replacements because my back was terrible, I'm like, no, I'm going to exercise and I swam for 20 years and I'm in the gym all the time and I'm going to go bike riding after the show before it rains, you know, but I'm healthy and I'm in my 60s. You know, and so you don't have to accept the prognosis that you get. And if I sat around and did nothing, my back would be terrible. But I took, you know, positive action. So you can do that. You can take the action. But the chiropractic, when I was a kid, made sense. So I went to one on my own as soon as I got a driver's license. I was one of the first places I drove to my local chiropractor, fixed my back, and did some great things. And, I went like 3-4 times a year for the next, I don't know, 40 years, you know, I'm still doing it, but it works. And that's what keeps me walking and healthy, you know? So there's always appropriate treatments but there's no guarantees, you know, and there's no way, even if like a lawyer too, same thing, just cause they've got a law degree and an American Bar Association accreditation doesn't mean they're a good lawyer. And so go ahead.
Let me finish the story about the dentist.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So
I thought you were
God
done.
I quit.
Yeah.
It's okay. We got time. You said a little bit, right?
We got the whole show.
So
yeah, feel free. We're winging it today. This is fun.
So he was arrested, and I was so happy. Thank God that the police didn't come asking me questions and all that because I was going to tell it all. But they never subpoenaed me or anything to come and testify or anything like that.
They could have volunteered.
The manager.
But they might have implicated you.
Nah,
see, it's a good thing they didn't because you were doing.
So I could care less. You know, to go on forward. I didn't want to get involved and all that, you know. But now I would be doing something like that because that's fraud. But anyway, so he got arrested. He was only in jail for 2 weeks because his brother had so much money and he bailed him out. I don't know how many millions they pay off.
Mm.
And he was out. Oh, yeah.
Is he a Democrat,
but
too?
He lost his license. Huh?
Is he a Democrat, too? They seem to get out of jail very easily.
Oh, they were Democrats, totally.
Okay, yeah.
They're Jewish.
Right.
But
the thing is,
his brother paid off millions for him to get out. And I heard that about 10 years later or whatever, he was practicing again. So I said, oh my God, I can't believe it. And you know, this doctor, I don't know what he was under, but some doctors, they do take drugs, you know, and I'll tell you a little story about a little boyfriend I had. He was always high on drugs, an MD. But anyway, this dentist, I remember him drilling on this old lady's mouth, and he slipped, and he was using the slow drill, which is a brrrr, that's the one that does that sound like that, not the sharp eye beam sound. And
right.
He kind of like slipped, and he kind of like hit right like underneath the tongue.
Ooh.
And he made a hole on
Ooh.
This lady's mouth. I
oh.
know, and she couldn't stop bleeding. She couldn't stop
oh.
bleeding, and we had to rush her to the hospital. And but this doctor, let me tell you, he was a butcher. A butcher. I have never seen anything like it. And then the funny thing is, I guess he was going through a lot at the same time because his wife was sleeping with a neighbor across the street named George. So George was always having an affair with his wife while he left in the morning. So George
oh,
took over.
What is the
I
secret
know.
World out there?
So,
of all these
so
things
listen,
that are going on that
funny.
We have no idea about.
This
is funny. Go ahead.
This is kind of funny because he was upset that his wife was cheating and all that. And I don't know, but George was a drunk, the neighbor, having an affair with his wife. And George slapped her, silly. And she had a black and blue face. But anyway, he was not allowed to come near his wife and all that. And
mm-hmm.
a couple of years later, I guess she was still at it with George because the doctor was too busy to take care of his wife. And they snuck one time out, and they were at a Holiday Inn. And
mm-hmm.
George was having an affair with his wife, and he died on top of her.
Oh, no. Oh, no. That's like Nelson Rockefeller.
Yeah,
remember, he was vice president. He died during sex.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, if you got to go, that's you know,
that's
the way to go.
That's the way he went. George went in a happy way. So.
Oh, boy. That's hysterical. So that actually does
because,
happen. I thought that was like a one-time freaky thing
no,
with Nelson
yeah,
Rockefeller.
It does happen.
It,
he
really.
Had a heart attack.
So we now that we've got the Action Radio Gossip Hour, this is hysterical.
So let me
keep
you.
Going. Uh-huh.
Let me tell you, so I didn't know anything about it, and
right.
he was upset and all that, the doctor, and he goes, did you know what happened to Linda? I said, what happened, doctor? George just died on top of her, and oh, my God, his wife's face, she wanted to hide. She didn't know what to do, but anyway, I thought that was the funniest thing, that George died on top of her, but but this guy, he was just not happy, and then he was a gambler because he was gambling all the Medicaid money, you know, at the time before he got arrested. And this guy went to Las Vegas the first time, and he gambled his building, his dentistry building. He was so addicted to gambling, and at the time his building was like $275,000, which that was a lot of money back in the 80s. And so he gambled his building, and he had to finance the whole thing. If not, they were going to come after his person and kill him, you know. But anyway, so that was a butcher doctor that I was working for. And then this professional doctor, he was one of the best. But the only thing with my doctor, he was sick and tired of dentistry. And he will give you the injection, make you numb, and then he went in the office, his little office, and then he didn't want to come out. And he was stumping and just upset because he didn't want to come out. And his wife said, can you go get him? And I was the only one that they could go knock on the door. I said, the patient is already getting numb, and now you're going to have to give the patient another injection. What the heck is wrong with you? I would treat him like that. And a lot of time I will stump underneath his foot because he was always talking over the patient's face in Spanish, like very upset, telling me something. And I gotta even I answer in English, like rude. But the most fun I had in dentistry, Greg, when we were taking care of the cartels from Colombia, because whenever they came and sat on that chair and we treated them well and clean them and all that good stuff and being nice talking to them, they will give us $300, $400, $500 tips. So all the assistants, we were like we made so much money during the cartel era in Miami, like you won't believe. It was crazy. Some of those cartels, they came and had like a $20,000 job in the whole mouth. And this was in the 80s. That was a lot of money, you know. And they come with a humongous brick cell phones. And that was the new thing back then, you know. So it was crazy, crazy, crazy times. Are you there or I lost you? Hello? Greg? Hello? Did your phone get messed up over there or something? Telling you the story about the dentistry lifestyle that I had, and everything went mute. So it's crazy times, but a lot of doctors are under the influence either of alcohol, drugs, not all of them, but many, because of the stress lifestyle that they live. Greg, what happened? Hello?
I think the FBI came and got him. He was on top.
Yeah. So how far did you hear me talking about that dentistry? And then it cut off, and I'm like, I don't know what happened.
Hi, guys.
I'm back.
What happened?
Power failure.
Huh?
Power failure. It was a power failure. My whole house just went out, but it only went out for a split second. But
no.
It was enough to cancel the signal. I'm back. It's okay. I got my cell phone. I'm just going to unplug my microphone now and continue on with the show. So I guess Bianchi called in. What I missed?
I know. This is crazy. And
well,
I was telling you the juicy story, man.
Oh, I know. I was loving it, and then all of a sudden I wasn't there. And I tried connecting back in. It wouldn't let me connect back. So I'd have to actually end the episode and start a new one. I'd rather just keep this one going. I'll just call on my cell phone. I just got to figure which plug to unplug so I don't unplug something else.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
So we had a good time during the 80s in dentistry. So, you know, too many stories.
Well, we're all over the place today. So this is kind of fun. So whatever, you know, whatever goes, goes. You know, I mean, I've got these articles I can talk about, but, you know, I'm just going to move my microphone and sort of rearrange my space here.
Can I tell you one more story?
Sure, go for it.
You're on a roll.
Yeah. I want to tell you about working for the most professional dentist, which, oh, my God, he was one of the best. He had the professional eyeglasses that you can see so close up and very, very good. No cheating there. He was such a good dentist. Very proud of him. I used to travel from Pensacola all the way to Bradenton just to go see him because it was hard for me to find a dentist here in Pensacola. And I did finally found one, but I told him off because they wanted for me to put a mask on. And I said, no, you're going to lose me as a patient. But anyway, so I was working for him in 1982, and we were hiring new dentists, and I was assisting new dentists coming in, and the new dentists, they didn't have a clue what they were doing, so I was guiding some of the dentists when they started working for us, and one lady dentist, she forgot to put, you know, that you put a black rubber thing around to protect you when you're doing a root canal, rubber dam it's called, and she forgot to put this thing on, and a 17-year-old kid, his throat got a little numb, and the stupid dentist, she dropped one of the, it looked like a long needle, a reamer, when you pull the nerve, and the kid swallowed it. I know. And his throat was numb, so he didn't feel that he swallowed, but she noticed. So we had to rush him to the hospital to get the thing out, so it was crazy. But there's a lot of crazy stories in all kinds of medical field and dentistry, you know, but I had a good time as a dental assistant in the 80s, was one of the best. Did you hear me telling you I used to make so much money as with tips with the cartels? I don't know.
No,
what
I didn't hear that story. We're getting all Josie's stories, dude. It's kind of fun. Yeah.
Yeah. We used to have a lot of cartels come into this dentist because he was one of the best dentists that I knew. And they used to give us $300, $400, $500 tips, the cartels.
Oh, you saw that? No, I remember that now. I do remember that, yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
let me tell you my dentist story, then we can see if Bianchi has a dentist story. My story was, and this is, I mean, I've told you the horror stories, but this is a funny one. One of the first jobs I had in San Francisco, I originally moved to California to, you know, get all my pilot ratings and join the airlines. What I didn't know when I got there was that California had a big recession. So I was hoping to work at a flying school and work my way into my ratings because I couldn't afford aviation colleges. And nobody was hiring. Nobody was flying. This is in the early 1980s. Now, the airlines were hiring like crazy, but you already had to have, you know, your ratings. And then they were hiring so many ex-military pilots, you know, they're still hiring post-Vietnam guys. And so it was a tough market. Anyway, so I got a job, you know, because I've always had an entertainment background. So I thought I ended up doing singing telegrams. Now, I know you find that hard to believe, but I used to do singing telegrams for Eastern Onion, you know, red tuxedo, the whole bit, right? And it had this little monkey you took with you and a little clapping monkey with the cymbals and all this silly stuff. Anyway, so I went to this dentist's office. And it was Valentine's Day. Of course, Valentine's Day is huge for singing telegrams. And so I go into this office, and I'm doing the whole singing thing and congratulating and stuff. And I think someone said, don't read the card. But by that point, it was just instinct. So I read the card, you know, and happy Valentine's Day from your, you know, your lover, Dave. And, of course, her husband's name was, you know, Steve. I didn't know. It was like everybody knew in the office, but nobody would talk about it. So she dies of embarrassment, this dental hygienist woman, runs away and like, oh, that's not her husband. Well, I didn't know. I announced her. So her idiot lover, you know, the guy she's having an affair with, sends her a singing telegram in front of the entire office with a card with his name on it. What an idiot.
That is bad. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so she got outed.
That's crazy.
You know, busted. So that's my story.
I know.
Singing telegrams was a great job. It was fun. I ended up on boats and in bowling alleys, and you know, and I was in fancy restaurants and just gorgeous houses. And I really got to see the Bay Area. It was fabulous fun.
That was the thing back then, the singing telegrams. I remember that.
Well, my favorite story is singing telegrams. Now that we're telling stories, as I got to do one in the North Beach restaurant, which is a very fancy restaurant, and in San Francisco, it's in the Italian section. And there was a woman who just got elected to Congress, and I thought, well, this is cool. And so I'm doing my singing telegram. Of course, you know me. I'm like 27, 28 of that. You know, I sat in her lap and congratulated her and put my arm around her and said, hey, welcome to Congress. This is great. And all these pictures are being taken of me. Do you know who that was?
Uh-huh. Ooh.
It was Nancy Pelosi.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes.
Oh, my gosh.
So somewhere out there, and when I get when the show gets huge and national, because somebody's got a picture of me in Nancy Pelosi's lap when she got elected to Congress, because I was at her congratulations party. I was the entertainment.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, no kidding.
That is crazy.
Had I
it's
known.
Cruel.
So Nancy Pelosi and I've shared Nancy's lap. I was right there in public. You know, it's like, hi, Nancy. You know, and it's hysterical. I didn't know who she – nobody knew who she – well, I mean, the people that voted for her knew who she was. I wasn't following politics at that point. You know, I mean, I wasn't. But, but who knew? I sat in the future speaker's lap, you know.
The cruel.
Flying around her and sang a congratulations song. I mean, I thought I was being hysterical. But she even had a funny look. I'll never forget that look in her big brown eyes, you know, like absolute horror. You know, what's this guy doing? Because, you know, she's not the biggest person in the world. I was 6'2", so, you know, it's kind of funny. Anyway, that's my story.
You're pretty tall.
Bianchi, you got a story? What's that?
I said, you're pretty tall.
No. Oh, yeah. We can get serious after this. We got about another hour and a half of serious talk, but we've had so much fun with this funny talk. Bianchi, don't have any stories to add to our collection this morning?
No, you guys are on a pedestal by yourself.
Well, I mean, there's always flight. We always tell flight instructor stories too, and different things like that. But those are the things that didn't work, and all of a sudden, you know, you find yourself at 4,000 or 5,000 feet. some idiot cuts your engine, and you're like, oh, that's interesting. Students look at me, what do we do now? I glide, obviously. You know, I'll tell you those
glide,
stories. Glide. Being a flight instructor is another fun thing that has provided me endless stories as well. All right, let's take another quick break here, and we'll come back. And I've got two catch-up topics since nobody's here today, and I'm building new reports. So the show is going to completely change over the next couple of weeks. Let me see if I just check my text. Okay, nobody's texting in. Okay, let's get back to that. Hope I don't push the wrong button and cut my own phone call. You guys just keep talking. But we've got new people coming in. Again, Pianchi, I don't know if you heard earlier, Captain Tom has finished his shows with us, and our wellness folks, Chansey, Lindsay, and Paige, have finished their regular stuff because they got their business going. And Wendy's not here today. We missed her. And the only person of the regular folks that showed up for reporting was Bill. And so so that's where we stand right now. All right, let me play a couple of things.
Okay.
I hope Wendy's doing okay.
What's that?
I hope Wendy's
is okay. No, I talked to her this morning. Yeah, Wendy's recovering from her mold situation, so she'll be fine. The house is clean, but she's just got to get over, you know, all that junk in her system. But she'll be fine. Be right back.
From addiction to achievement, that is the story of Mike Lindell. It started with MyPillow, and now goes to MyCoffee. Action Radio is proud to be an affiliate of MyPillow. Our discount code is the same for all our product affiliates, WYL, which stands for Write Your Laws. MyPillow pillows are guaranteed the most comfortable pillow you'll ever own. Action Radio is guaranteed to be the most controversial show you will ever hear. Check out their products with our discount code at MyPillow.com/WYL. That's MyPillow.com/WYL. Or order now by calling 1-800-544-8939. That's 1-800-544-8939. Sleep well so you can wake up and hear Action Radio live. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try, even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com.
Action Radio, part of the ADHD Radio Network, the ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed, and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news. Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take. That is Action Radio.
I have to remember to unmute my phone. I was looking at the microphone, but I suddenly realized I'm not on the microphone anymore. I'm on the phone. So, and that plus all my websites blanked out too. So they're all my nice arrangements before the show, they're all gone too. So everything's kind of crazy right now. So we're just kind of starting over, but that's how it goes around here. Yeah. Uh-huh.
So the show that you did with Bill, is it right?
No, this is the same show. So so what it did was...
No, I'm saying the recording and all that, can you spike it together or no?
No, well, the show never stopped. The only thing that stopped was my computer. But the show, because we were logged in, Blog Talk kept it going. But once you get logged out, I couldn't connect again with my microphone to the show. So I tried broadcasting. I tried talking, and your line was live, and you didn't answer me, so I thought I was dead. Not dead, but I mean the microphone was dead. So then I tried reconnecting the direct connect, and that they said, you've already called in. You know, so it thought I was still there, even though I wasn't. So the connection was broken, but Blog Talk thought I was still connected. So the show should be fine. It'll just have you guys
talking.
You
need to buy a power supply, Chico.
Like a spare power supply?
Yeah, a power supply, so when the power goes off, your show continues.
Even if it's interrupted for a split second, as soon as that connection's cut, it goes. So unless the power supply – see, the power came right back.
It holds it up,
literally.
Yeah.
So I can look into – what would that do? So I plug into the power supply. The power supply plugs into the surge protector. How does it work?
The computer. Yeah, you it's a big thing. I don't know how much they are, $80, $100. So you buy your power supply, you plug it in into your computer, and if anything happens, it continues going, I believe. Yeah, it doesn't damage anything.
I can't afford it this month, but you know, we'll see.
Yeah,
so we're looking for more sponsors too, because one of our main ones decided to call it quits. So that's cut into a little bit of my cut into everything actually. So yeah, we're kind of, everybody seems to be disappearing right now, which is really too bad because some amazing things are about to happen. Can't tell you yet. You're going to find out very soon, but we're turning a big corner here. And so I'll announce these things as we can. But some, you know, things are changing fast, I think, for the better. But you know, it's interesting as we go through phases. Like, we had a big wellness phase. You know, we've had big political phases. We've had different we had family court. We were doing that a lot at one point. So we go through phases here. All right, let's the two main topics this week: who's running the country and the coming civil war. And these are huge topics. Well, that's
Obama's
what I'm figuring
running
too.
The country.
Okay, well, see, now I've got several articles on that. So we read the one yesterday with Lawrence Sellin. Lawrence Sellin, you know, says that we need a I'll just go back and just cover this a little bit here. He says we need change will only occur through a bottom-up nationwide political insurgency. And I'm saying that's us. Now, his program is securing the national borders, detaining and expelling all illegal aliens, declaring English the only official language, strictly enforcing equal opportunity, eliminating all discriminatory diversity and equity policies. That'd be everything from critical race theory to affirmative action, outlawing the teaching or promotion of critical race theory and sex-oriented curricula for children, establishing a simplified and equitable tax system for individuals and businesses to limit both the Internal Revenue Service and the impact of lobbyists. Wait a minute, I'm a lobbyist. Begin moving federal departments out of Washington, D.C. to other locations in the country and hiring local employees. Yeah, I'd like to put the that'd be a good place to move the Department of Education. I don't know, Guam? That'd be a good start. Anyway, restoring energy self-sufficiency, rebuilding from the ground up the Department of Justice, the FBI, and all intelligence agencies. I like that one. Maintaining a strict construction and interpretation of the Constitution, limiting congressional terms to a total of 12 years, if for the House of Representatives or the Senate. All current members of Congress have been there longer than 12 years. They're done. Removing all special benefits for members of Congress. And then it says, with the exception of funds necessary for the defense of the nation, establish a yearly 5% cut in government spending and a 10% cut in foreign aid. I think he missed a big deal by not having something to do with the national debt. Of course, my big thing is to take away the power of Congress to borrow money.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So that's where we stand on that.
It's a disgrace what these people are doing, period. But they're going to eat all that money. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. But you know what's interesting, though? If you look at Lawrence Sellin and you look at other folks, they're all talking about the same thing. You know, Steve Bannon, you listen to him. I listen to him. I catch them in a war room after the show. And all of these folks are saying that it's time. They're basically calling for a revolution, and a peaceful one, not an armed insurrection, you know, but a peaceful revolution. And they're talking about, you know, the people. We got to take our country back. I mean, how many times have you heard that? But they don't give you a way. Some know your way and I know my way are totally different. But some people are talking about this, like this, you know, Lawrence Sellin's talking about a national insurgency. Not an insurgency, a violent one, but an insurgency of policy changes, of law changes. And that's what we do here. So I want to talk to them. you know, I'll see if I can get in contact today after the show sometime. But there's a lot of people that are calling, said Victor Davis Hanson, you know, the people have to change things. And they're all talking about the stuff that we do here every day. I just find that interesting.
You know,
I think we're in the right place at the right time for some big change.
But, you know, Greg, this criminal government of ours running our country to the ground, they want war. That's what's going on in the Ukraine. They're brainwashing the whole world, making them believe that Putin is attacking, throwing a missile, doing all this bombing and all that in Ukraine, and it's a lie. I believe they have evidence that the torpedo that they blow up the bridge in Ukraine, and I got videos from my Ukrainian family. Oh, Putin, look what Putin is doing. It's not Putin doing this. I guarantee you, you're going to see it. It's not Putin doing that. That came from a Ukrainian, either a ship or underground, what do you call it? Underground, those ships.
Submarine?
I cannot think of the name for submarines.
Yeah, submarines. Yeah.
Yeah.
See,
yeah.
I don't think it was.
My husband was describing
it. Yeah. Torpedoes hit underwater, and this affected the bridge above the waterline. This looks more like a missile.
It was a sort of torpedo missile, but we're not sure. But it came from the Ukraine, from their government. Zelensky's doing this to blame Putin. That's exactly what's happening.
No. But this is the bridge from Russia to the Crimea. This is a Russian bridge.
I know.
So they're not blaming Putin for it. Zelensky's taking credit for it. Well, who's blaming Putin for it? That's like blaming Putin for the pipeline. That's a bunch of nonsense.
That's exactly what they're doing.
But I think we blew up the pipeline. I think I sort of think China's kind of out of that. I don't think
Biden
makes sense.
Well, Obama.
No, Biden blew up the pipeline. Okay.
Yes.
And Biden supplied, Obama. We should start calling it the Obama administration just to piss people off.
Yeah, it is.
So the Obama administration, it is, I know it is, but let's start calling it that just to see what happens. So the Obama administration, you know, supplied the missiles to Ukraine, because I don't think they have a missile, I don't know if they had missiles that accurate to blow up that bridge, or the switchblade and the drones and the other things they have. Now, Russia has a bunch of Iranian drones, which is interesting. They're suicide drones, they're called, or killer drones or whatever. So the drones actually, they're like kamikaze drones. They actually fly into, drone becomes a missile itself. And so they just guide it right into the target. Well, there's nobody on board. Who cares, right? It's just, you know, there's no difference between a drone flying in and a drone. It makes more sense than having a drone drop a bomb that just kind of glides in, maybe with the wind currents. So this is much more accurate. A much accurate way to do it. Yeah.
But all of this happening,
Greg,
all of this happening is the Biden with Zelensky from Ukraine. They're doing all this. I was watching a video and watching the face and the reaction, and I understood some of the Russian things that Putin was saying, and he had somebody translate it, because I watched this news that he comes on, and he was saying, I was only rescuing my neighbors like you would do too, and protecting his border from nuclear and all that stuff. The Ukraine has got all these things, bioweapon labs and all that.
He's
protecting his country.
Well, I believe, I think Putin's acting, Putin's doing some stupid things, but he's also doing some things he has to. And so, but that's pretty typical of most leaders. They go too far one way, they make mistakes. But if I were Putin, I mean, I wouldn't want Ukraine in NATO either. In fact, I wouldn't want Eastern Europe to be a buffer zone. So we talked about this with Captain Tom Stewart last week, that the way to handle this, I mean, Trump, do you hear Trump in his last rally calling for a negotiated peace? He says, and I believe he would have done this, he would have gotten Zelensky and Putin together in a room, sat them down and said, okay, we're going to solve this now. We're not going to tolerate you people going to war with each other and thousands of people or hundreds of thousands of people dying because you're both stupid. So sit down, make a decision, and let's get this thing solved. I mean, that's how
Trump is just saying that in front of the world, but there's more behind closed door going on.
Well,
Trump and Putin.
I know. I believe that's how he would have handled it. And I think the way to handle it would be to get NATO completely out of Eastern Europe, leave Eastern Europe alone, and let Eastern Europe and Russia figure this out. Let them fight over Ukraine, but not us. We got no business there. Bianchi?
But if you notice, Greg, all the other countries are not getting involved because they know exactly what's going on with Russia and Ukraine. It's not Russia.
There's another reason, too.
Huh?
No, there's another. They want their oil. They want their oil and they want their natural gas. They're not going to piss off Russia and lose all their energy. They've already lost their pipeline. They've already lost their natural gas. It's going to be a horrible winter. So who they really should be blaming is Brandon. Brandon cut off the Russian pipeline. So that's where the blame
mm-hmm.
should go. And quite frankly,
yeah.
Europe never gets involved. Europe doesn't get involved in these things. They save their money. Germany doesn't even have a national defense. They count on NATO. They count on us to pay for their defense still. I mean, that's one thing
yeah.
in 1946 when there was no Germany. You know, Russia would happily have invaded and taken all of Germany. It made sense for us to have NATO in those days. But as soon as the Russian Empire, the Soviet Union collapsed, NATO should have been dissolved because there's no reason for it after that. All it's done is caused trouble. It's made the world less safe, less stable. Never need to be there.
That's right. But these criminals running our country, they're the one pushing for war to distract for the election coming up. And this
but they
is
always push
what's
for war.
Going on.
And
yeah.
This is the thing. They always
yeah.
push for war.
They've been behind
war
all the
big
wars.
Special.
Yeah.
Yeah. But there was a big special on, I think, either One American News or Newsmax. Man, it was Newsmax. But they're talking about this. I want to get to another article that you're going to be really shocked by. But what they do, the United States, you know, and this is right out of 1984. There always has to be an enemy. There always has to be a distraction. You know, we have to be at war somewhere because it makes bankers and military industrial complex people rich. It makes politicians rich because they spend the money and they get the glory and they watch bombs going off and they're happy. It's really disgusting.
And they get a lot of that money back in their bank account. That's what's been going on for years.
Well, I need to find a good investigative reporter that's tracing the money that goes to Ukraine and where it's going. So I'll be looking at Ukraine money in a bit. Pianki, why don't you make a comment here, and then I'm going to get to an article in The Guardian, which is rather interesting.
I'm going to continue listening, but
I can't make no remark.
Okay, so Josie's going to go listen on hold. She'll still be there. And Pianki, I'm sorry, what was your statement?
No, I didn't have no remark. Goodbye, Josie. Be careful, please.
Bye, Josie.
Okay, I'll continue listening to you guys. God bless. Bye.
All right. Anyway, now that we're going to news mode, let me play my news theme, and we shall get to our following article. And now, the Action Radio News story. That's kind of loud. Stories from around the world. So let's get on the newsroom and see what's going on. I got to check my broadcast. Now, my broadcast news theme is actually kind of quiet. You know, I'm checking volumes. This is the only time I get to hear things is you guys hear them. So that makes a difference. All right. So I found an article that's a complete contrast to the one we just read by Lawrence Sellin, who believes that there's a civil war coming. The left also believes there's a civil war coming. And I got an article here from Robert Reich, or as Rush Limbaugh used to say, Robert Reich. Anyway, so this guy is the ultra-Marxist leftist, former Secretary of Labor in the Clinton administration. And so this is in The Guardian, which is the British leftist press. It's an article from May 11th, 2022, says the second American Civil War is already happening. So exactly the same headline from the conservative Lawrence Sellin, and this is from the leftist Robert Reich. He says, America will still be America, but it is fast becoming two versions of itself. The open question is how will the two be civil towards each other? Yeah, I know what the left wants. The left wants them to dominate, so we have to be civil to them, but that's another story. He says, the U.S. Supreme Court's upcoming decision to reverse Roe v. Wade, an early draft of which was leaked last week, let's give you the timeline, right, doesn't ban abortions. It leaves the issue to the states. As a result, it will put another large brick in the growing wall separating blue and red America. The second American Civil War is already occurring. But it is less a war. It is less of a war than a kind of benign separation analogous to unhappily married people who don't want to go through the trauma of a formal divorce. He says one America is largely urban, racially and ethnically diverse and young. The other is largely rural or ex-urban, white and older. So this is how he sees the world. He sees the world in groups. But it's interesting that they always characterize the Roe v. Wade decision as banning abortions. It does nothing of the kind. It does leave it to the states, but nobody remarks on the fact that the original Roe v. Wade order was an illegal order to begin with. You know, and the left talks about the right to an abortion. Well, there's never been a right to an abortion. You can't have a right to abortion when one of the lives involved in it ends. That's just – that's a contradiction. That's a misdefinition of what rights are. And that's never really talked about. So the Supreme Court did not take away the right to an abortion because that right never existed. You can't have a right over somebody else. But it's just interesting that the left never sees it that way, and they see everything as groups. So their America. Their America is – what they've got here, young – oh, largely urban, racially and ethnically diverse and young. That's one America. The other America, yeah. In fact, I would call that the tax-funded, you know, and the tax-earning would be the other America, the rural one. Rural or ex-urban, white and older. Pianchi, curious so far? The groups, everything's the group? Let me throw it back to him.
Well, then you got a Constitution in it. The Constitution gives individual rights, not group rights.
Yeah, which raises the question, can leftists ever be qualified for political office when they don't see individual rights? They don't see the world as individual rights. Therefore, they couldn't possibly govern in a republic that's dedicated to individual rights because they simply are so ideologically opposed or diverted from the idea of individual rights that they don't consider that a concept. So how can liberals even be qualified to be in government? There's a question.
Well, they like to create, they instigate policies that help create groups of oppressed people.
Mm-hmm. Except for the group that he says is ex-urban. What do you mean ex-urban? So they were urban, they left? What if they were never there? What if they're always rural or suburban to begin with? He doesn't say suburban or rural. He says ex-urban. That's an interesting choice of words. In other words, urban is right. Ex-urban is ex, in other words, bad. You know, spouse. You know, they were a good spouse, but now they're an ex. So ex is like a negative term. I just think he says that the good is racially and ethnically diverse and young and urban. Those are the good people, right? The bad people are ex-urban. In other words, they were urban, white and older. I mean, that's the way it reads to me. He's making a real split, you know, young, ethnically diverse, good, white and older, bad. Anyway, he says the split is accelerating. Red zip codes are getting redder and blue zip codes bluer. Well, see, I never liked the red-blue split anyway because red is the color of communism. So to define, you know, patriots and Americans and conservatives as red is insane because people don't understand symbolism. Then he says, of the nation's total 3,143 counties, the number of super landslide counties where a presidential candidate won at least 80% of the vote jumped from 6% in 2004 to 22% in 2020. That's actually significant. I didn't know that before, that there were very few counties that were absolutes like that, like over 80%, but a whole bunch more in 2020. So we are polarizing. That I will grant him. He's right on that.
That's all right. That's good.
You know, that
as long as you don't compromise.
Well, and that's why I was going to get that Barry Goldwater quote, which I should pull up again. And I think it's like extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice. And then he says moderation. Let me see if I can get that quote again because it's a really good quote. It came up during Bill. Extremism in defense of liberty. There we go. So it is always easy to find. So Barry Goldwater said this a bunch of years ago. Let me see if I can find his full quote. See if the National Review brings it up. Come on, guys. I just said this was easy to find. Now it's not easy to find. Huh. All right, I have to go find it again. Let me get my Barry Goldwater quotes. Here he says, extremism in defense of liberty is no vice. Moderation in the pursuit of justice is no virtue. That's Barry Goldwater. So in other words, being polarized is not a problem if you're being polarized in a way that brings about more liberty. I think that's what he's. I think that's what Barry Goldwater was getting to. All right, here we go.
Well, the whole contention.
Go ahead.
The whole contention said best, sort of in a James Bond movie. Live and let live is what you should do. Live and let live.
Yeah, but that's not the title of the movie. The movie title is Live and Let Die.
But I said it was portion. It was sort of on the contention of that title. Live and Let Die But let other people live, and you live what you're going to do, and stop trying to impose your way onto others.
Yep. So I agree. Live and let live. You know, if someone, this is why I say, you know, when we get liberals and stuff on the show that disagree with me, I'm not here to change their minds. That's not my purpose. I do want to find out how they think and why they think the way they do. You know, because that's interesting, and then I might be able to persuade people in the middle. But if you're a diehard liberal, if you really believe in a big government, if you believe in socialist programs, you know, that's fine. I mean, I'll disagree with you on policy. I don't care about that. Where my problem is, and I think most people's problem, is where the Marxists come in and say, not only, you know, can't you disagree with us, but we're not going to let you talk about your disagreement. You can't express your disagreement. That's the real problem. That's where the Marxists, you know, diverge. Anyway, let's get back to Robert Reich. He says, surveys show that Americans find it increasingly important to live around people who share their political values. Animosity towards those in the opposing party is higher than at any time in living memory. 42% of registered voters believe Americans in the other party are downright evil. Now, is this manufactured or is this real? Because I think the Democrats are polarizing by the cancel culture, by saying that you can't disagree with us, and if you do, you're a racist. You can't disagree with us. If you do, we're going to shut you down. You can't disagree with us or we're going to ruin your family business. America was never like that. So I think the polarizing is because one side, you know, I've never heard a conservative say, I want to shut down that Democrat business. I want to kick those people out of their homes. I want to take them off social media. I want to ruin their Twitter accounts. Conservatives just don't think like that. So we don't care because we live and let live. Democrats live and let die. Oh, there's a political slogan for you. That'd be interesting. All right. But now let's get back to more of what he says here. This is actually kind of an interesting article. He says almost 40% would be upset at the prospect of their child marrying someone from the opposite party. If you worry about interracial, now we're having interpolitical marriage. We've never talked about that, right? At the president challenges, even before the 2020 election, when asked if violence would be justified if the other party won the election, 18.3% of Democrats and 13.8% of Republicans responded that it was okay. I don't believe that. I think it's a little high on the Republican side, but I think it's a little low on the Democrat side. But the idea that people think it's okay to get violent if the other side wins, I think that was proven by the riots that happened after Trump won. Riots by Antifa, riots by Black Lives Matter in Democrat cities across the country, they believe that violence, when you don't win, is okay. So he's right on it, but he's only half right. But what about this idea of inter-political marriage? I never thought about that until I read this article. I didn't know that was a thing. Is that a thing?
Do you do it over and over again?
Oh, you're looking at the definition of insanity? No,
well,
I'm curious.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Well, let's put it this way. What if, because we're talking about interracial marriage.
You sound kind of muffled. What are you doing? You turn flips or what?
No, I'm here. Can you hear me okay now?
Well, maybe it's just the weather.
Okay. I try to stay close to the phone. So I got my phone sitting on a stack of books. So, you know, because I don't want to put it up to my ear because it's got radiation. But I don't mind getting close enough to talk to it a few inches away. Anyway, but the inter-political marriage. I mean, is that threatening to people? That if someone is from a different political party, in other words, you can't marry a Democrat or you can't marry a Republican, is that a thing?
Well, I tell you what I've heard of that. I don't think it's insane. I think it's a legitimate reason. It's a legitimate point. And I've heard families,
okay.
I've heard that come out of...
I mean, do you think people are getting divorced over the fact they belong to different political parties? I guess they are.
I think so. Yeah, I think
so. Wow. Of course, I'm kind of, you know, off marriage anyway, so I don't think it's going to really affect me. But yeah, if the country's that split... Well, and I told you my stories in San Francisco where I back in my online dating days, you know, I'd meet women. Of course, most women in the Bay Area are liberal. It's kind of hard to avoid it. And I tried to avoid politics. You know, I just want to meet people, you know, go have fun, meet some nice women, you know, maybe find a girlfriend, who knows. But the thing was, you know, if I said anything, you know, and you invariably something political would come up. They would say something, I would say something, not intentionally,
you know, I'd react to something they said, yeah. And they're like, oh, you're one of those people.
You have blacks that want that don't want their kids marrying whites. You have blacks that don't want their kids playing with whites. You had Middle Easterners didn't want their kids dating blacks. You know, with the Mercy killings, a couple of cases of that. So yes, those ethnocentric values do prevail.
Well, I know about them, but I didn't know how bad the problem was of interpolitical marriage. I didn't even, like I said, I just made up that term. But that's interesting. You know, and then he said,
"Oh yeah, I've heard of fathers telling their daughters, I'm gonna be bringing them Democratic dating in here."
That's funny. Yeah. Well, it's this whole family dynamic thing is interesting. Then Robert Rice, the leftist Secretary of Labor, says increasingly each America is running under different laws. Red states are making it nearly impossible to get abortions, but easier than ever to buy guns. I mean, he says that like that's a bad thing. Then he says they're also suppressing votes, which is not true. In Florida and Texas, you know, teams of election police have been created to crack down on the rare crime of voter fraud, another fallout from Trump's big lie. So this is an interesting – so this is what I say. If you want to know how leftists think, you got to read their stuff. So they believe that the world is divided by a group. Go ahead.
The Supreme Court just ruled on a case in Pennsylvania with ballots that didn't have no dates on them. And the one judge said that they should be counted. And the people were saying they should be thrown out because they're illegal ballots. And the Supreme Court just ruled on that.
What did they say? That they had to be thrown out?
Yeah, they should have been thrown out.
So what did the court rule?
Of course, it didn't change the outcome of the election of the judge that was who lost. But
did the court rule they should be thrown out or not?
The court ruled with the complaint of that ballots that didn't have dates on them should not be counted. Where'd you get that
good.
From?
So the Supreme Court actually did the right thing then. The Pennsylvania court.
No, that was Sotomayor. That was the Supreme Court.
Oh, the Supreme Court of the United States? Of the United States ruled that Pennsylvania couldn't accept ballots without a date on it.
Right. Well, okay, it didn't say that they shouldn't. It said that the complaint was a good complaint.
Okay. So what's the result then?
Well, it didn't change the candidate that was contending for the seat position, but you know, he's still lost.
Okay, interesting. All right. Well, let me tell you, but this is actually kind of an interesting article because it really – this is what we're going to be up against. We're going to be up against a Democrat and a leftist, you know, Marxist America that looks at everything in terms of group, everything in terms of politics. You know, you're with us or you're against us. You know, everything in terms of whether you're urban
right
or –
right and wrong.
Or
they look at things right and wrong, rather than law.
You know, yeah,
like,
abortion is good.
Anytime you hear, like, the individuals compare the – a Second Amendment to the right to have abortion, is something wrong with them.
But, and that's why this is an interesting line. Red states, he says, are making it nearly impossible to get abortions, but easier than ever to buy guns, which is fascinating, you know, because they think, here on the one hand, they think they're saving lives by getting rid of guns, which they're not. They're actually costing lives. And they're costing lives by abortions, which they consider, you know, saving lives, health care. You're saving the mother from having to be a mother. You're saving the woman from having to be a mother. It's such a totally different orientation. You know,
what he said is ridiculous when he compared the two in that particular matter.
But these are the people that we have to deal with. So if we're going to deal with the left, we have to understand how they think. And how they think their version of civil war is that they're going to fight for abortions and against guns. Even though the Constitution doesn't mention abortions, doesn't mention health care at all. It's a state matter. So the Supreme Court did the right thing by correcting. They didn't take away the right of abortion. They corrected a bad decision, an illegal decision. Roe v. Wade was an illegal decision. The court had no authority to make that decision. And the states had no obligation, therefore, to follow it. And yet the court made that opinion. And the states, for some reason I will never understand, followed it. But they didn't have to. Anyway. But this is the orientation. Then it says they're also suppressing votes, which isn't true. So the left believes that it's just a big lie that the election was stolen. And they think that, you know, that, that all the voting fraud there is just, you know, if you're against their vote fraud, you're a racist because it's suppressing the vote. So in other words, anything that doesn't let them win and doesn't let them mail order and ballot harvest and everything else like that, they think of that. So you take away their cheating, they think of that as suppressing their vote. But, so we have to understand that if we're going to beat them. But that's how they think. So in other words, they're the natural winners. Anything they do to win is okay, and anything we do to stop them by actually making them conform to the law, they think of that as voter suppression. That's what we're up against. And here it goes again. Here's another. You're going to love this line too, right? He says, Reich says, they're banning the teaching of America's history of racism. Is that fascinating? So in other words,
yeah.
So people who know, people who know, who are woke, obviously know that America has a history of racism, and the evil, dastardly Republicans are banning the teaching of history of America's racism. See, I would rephrase that we're teaching, you know, we're banning the teaching of the false claim of racism.
Well, so you know how to put a stop to that. Well, you see, if you're going to teach racism, teach black racism too.
Oh, that makes sense.
See, then that's stopping. Listen, oh, my goodness, I didn't think about that.
What if a college did that? What if we had the Louis Farrakhan, you know, black racism course? You know?
Absolutely.
Wouldn't that be hysterical? If you, say you had, like, you know, someone get the Louis Farrakhan memorial, he's still alive, Louis Farrakhan teaching award. So if a black professor teaching that Jews are termites or parasites, and what else does Farrakhan teach? That that white people are the devil. And actually offer that course. I would be interested to see if a
Jesse Jackson teaching Hymietown.
Hymietown, yeah, exactly. What do blacks have against Jews? What's the how did that get started? Is it the same old banker conspiracy?
The secret relation the secret relationship between black and Jews was a publication came out of Nation of Islam faction.
Okay. So why would black Americans hate Jewish Americans? Or is it Israel itself?
Really, you have to say some, because all don't. Because you have some Sammy Davis Jr. was a black. Was a Jew.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even Whoopi Goldberg, I think, is Jewish, right? The Whoopi Goldberg followed Judaism. I think one of her boyfriends or
Goldberg's
something was.
Yeah, Goldberg's a Jewish name.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I remember we had friends in high school. We tried to think of the most Jewish name we could. We came up with Goldbergmanstein. I'll let you think about that for a minute. Anyway, I had a lot of Jewish friends in high school because they were all in the band. You know, so our band was like one-third Jewish. So when we had Yom Kippur and Rosh Hashanah, you know, a third of the band was gone. We had big holes in the band. You know, it was really pretty funny. Yeah, election high school band. Yep, the Jewish students are out for the holiday. You know, so we definitely weakened our sound considerably. It was funny. Anyway, so back to Robert Reich, the leftist, says that red states are making it nearly impossible to get abortions, but easier to get guns. He says they're also suppressing votes, you know, because they think vote fraud is Trump's lie. Then it says they're banning the teaching of America's history of racism. Then it says they're requiring, this is talking about Republicans, Robert Reich, the leftist, they're requiring transgender students to use bathrooms and join sports teams that reflect their gender at birth. Like, that's a problem. This is really a textbook guide to everything that's wrong with the left, expressed the way he would naturally. This is in The Guardian, so he's writing to a friendly audience. Here's the leftist writing to other leftists. This is what they say to each other. Oh, I can't believe they're making, you know, men use the men's bathroom because that's what they were born as. That's a terrible thing. You know, this is fascinating. I'd read part of this article. I hadn't read the whole thing. And then it says they're making it harder to protest, unless you consider Antifa destroying a city a protest. They're saying that the Republicans are making it more difficult to qualify for unemployment benefits or other forms of public assistance. Well, for illegals, yeah. Then it says, and almost impossible to form labor unions. That's not true either. Have you seen the size of labor unions, particularly teachers' unions? So that's not happening either. They're talking about right-to-work laws. Then he says, and they're passing bounty laws enforced not by governments, which can be sued in federal court, but by rewards to private citizens for filing lawsuits on issues ranging from classroom speech to abortions to vaccinations. bounty laws. Have you ever heard that before? There's a bounty? That's like a bounty on somebody's head. You know, a bounty on an animal means you turn the animal in, you get money for killing it. So that's what a bounty is, or a bounty is like on somebody, a felon, to bring him back to justice. What do you mean a bounty law? That's a strange terminology. Anyway, then he says blue states are moving in the opposite direction. Well, obviously. Several, including Colorado and Vermont, are codifying a right to abortion, even though there is no right to abortion. Some are helping cover abortion expenses for out-of-staters. Well, that's pretty absurd, too. Yet he thinks that's a virtue. Then he says, when Idaho proposed a ban on abortions that empowers relatives to sue anyone who helps terminate a pregnancy after 6 weeks, nearby Oregon, well, not that nearby, approved $15 million to help cover the abortion expenses of patients from other states. He says that like it's a good thing. It's a good thing states are paying for abortions. That's crazy. But that's how they think. Then he says Maryland and Washington have expanded access and legal protections to out-of-state abortion patients. He spends a lot of time on abortion. One package of pending California bills would expand access to California abortions and protect abortion providers from out-of-state legal action. So what is the left's obsession with abortion, especially black children? Has anybody ever found anything in writing from a leftist that really says why this is so important to them? I don't understand it.
Well, I don't know. Maybe it's the left is taking on their early on democratic racism. They want black women to blacks to exterminate themselves.
Makes sense.
Or want whites to exterminate themselves.
Yeah. Well, I think they want Americans to exterminate themselves, and they want, because I don't see, and I made this point yesterday, you don't see any Planned Parenthood abortion clinics on the southern border. You would think if this was a virtuous and good thing to do, that the first thing that the left would do would be to encourage illegal aliens to have abortions. I mean, wouldn't that follow the pattern?
Well, yeah, you should put those mobile abortion units down on the border.
Yeah, right at the border. You know, that would be one way to eliminate birthright citizenship, which we all know legally doesn't exist. And he spends the rest. Oh, then he comes, let's get to states' rights. I want to get to a different point. He says, well, what would happen to the poor in red states who are disproportionately people of color? Oh, the poor in red states are disproportionately people of color? Well, I think some of the rich people in red states are people of color, too. But that's not what he says. He says states' rights, let's get to this one. States' rights was always a cover for segregation and harsh discrimination. The poor, both black and white, both white and people of color. Isn't white a color? saying that white and people of color is kind of absurd, really, because, you know, white being a color, unless I'm invisible. He says states' rights was always a code for segregation and harsh discrimination. He says the poor, both white and people of color, are already especially burdened by anti-abortion legislation because they can't afford travel to a blue state to get an abortion. Well, wait a minute. I thought he was getting away from abortion, but apparently not. This is really obsessed with it. So states' rights was a cover for segregation and harsh discrimination? How can states' rights be segregation? And it's not just the abortion issue. Let's see what else he says. Is that the only right they believe in, the abortion right? I'm trying to find more stuff here.
Sounds like it. I mean, actually, really, what else do they – what else? They can – you can sit at the lunch counter. You can swim in the swimming pool. So what else?
Yeah. Well, it's just fascinating that the number one right he talks about is abortion. He doesn't talk about free speech. He doesn't talk about religion. He doesn't talk about the right to redress your government for grievances. He doesn't talk about the right to peaceably assemble. He doesn't talk about, the freedom of religion. He doesn't even talk about separation of church and state, even though there isn't one. He doesn't talk about lobbying. He doesn't talk about the rights of the accused. He doesn't talk about the right of soldiers not to be in your quarters, which is kind of an old one, but it's still there. He doesn't talk about the right of, non-self-incrimination. He doesn't talk about double jeopardy. You know, doesn't talk about a lot of things. Doesn't even mention democracy here much. All he talks about is abortion. That singular obsession, I don't understand. I need a really good leftist to explain to me why that is such a big deal. To me, it's like this evil that, you know, if someone makes a mistake, like in the first 24, 48 hours, you know, if they take a morning after pill, I'm not going to scream and yell at them. I mean, I'm not an absolutist. I don't, you know, as much as I do believe life begins at conception, I'm not going to condemn people that do something, you know, to end a pregnancy within like the first 48 hours.
I've seen children books titled "Mommy's Getting an Abortion." Black children book.
Yeah. See, now the normalizing of abortion is something that is absolutely criminal. Where let's talk about this for a second, because I've sort of been pondering this question too. Where do you think most Americans are on abortion? If you had to pick conception to birth, most Americans will tolerate terminating a pregnancy at some point. That point's changing because of ultrasound. But I think Americans, for the most part, even though they don't like abortion, will still tolerate, you know, a certain point. What do you think?
I tell you, Greg, it's hard to say. You know, really. I mean,
well, let me run a theory
on how
you.
You're looking at.
Yeah, let me run a theory by you. Okay, so let me run a theory by you.
If a woman believes that Jesus was coming back into the world through the womb, well, he's been aborted many, many times.
That's very possible. That wouldn't surprise me. So is abortion wrong? Yes. You know, do we as a society absolutely, I don't know what you see, this is, well, let me tell you, know, without getting, because my, I don't know, I pretty much express my personal view that it's something that if you can, if it's an emergency situation in like a 24, 48 hour period, I'm not going to condemn somebody for ending a pregnancy at that point. I think what it really comes down to is what people think of as a person. Yes, there's almost like the separation between life and a person. Yes, life begins because sperm are alive and eggs are alive. Otherwise, they wouldn't be able to produce human beings. However, there's a point when cells are dividing and there's a point when there's a person. And I think that's a question people wrestle with. They don't want to abort babies, but they don't mind ending, you know, a few cells. And the big lie, we've talked about this on the show before, the big lie was always the left said, well, it's not a baby, it's just a group of cells. You're not aborting a person, you're just aborting some cells. And I think a lot of people believe that, including me, because we didn't have any evidence to the contrary, right? And so then ultrasound comes out, and maybe 20, 30 years or whenever ultrasound came out. And all of a sudden people are saying, well, wait a minute, we thought that was a couple of cells. And then people find out that babies are actually developing a whole lot sooner. I think people are able to tolerate the idea of abortion if they don't think that a baby's being hurt. If there's not a pain involved, if you're not killing a person, if it's just, you know, taking a bunch of cells. But now that definition has changed and that time has moved up incredibly, I think there's a lot more support for the 15 weeks or even earlier, the heartbeat bills and things like that. You don't want to, you know, if the baby has a heartbeat, that's a baby. You know, even before it has a heartbeat, it's still a baby. So now we're talking about a living being. And where is that point? You know, when do cells become a baby? We can't really define that, but I think that's what most Americans are. In other words, if you're on the cell side, if it's just a few cells, if the conception has just taken place, I think most Americans go, okay, if you have to have an abortion, that's the time to do it. But we don't like it anyway. But I think most Americans, but once you get beyond a certain point, once the baby starts developing, they're like, nope, you're too late. You know, adoption, you know, something else. I think that's where most Americans are. I'm just
well, yeah, that. Then you asked them a question about intelligent design.
Right.
The ones before abortion, just ask them, do you believe in intelligent design or do you believe in evolution?
Well, unless there
it
is
then
evolution.
Depends on who you're talking to. If I'm talking to blacks, I say, well, you know, I don't care if black women kill all their babies. I just ask that they follow the law. That's what you should do one time. When you're talking to somebody black about abortion, tell them, say, well, if a black woman want to kill all their babies, go ahead, but just abide by the law. Then they're going to look at you strange.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, though, you know, that and the laws sometimes can be wrong. You know, laws in liberal states that allow abortion after birth are wrong. I mean, I think the vast majority of Americans would agree with it, except they're radical abortionists. And I'm not sure what their fascination is with this. But I think that, like I say, I think most people, as long as it's not a baby, as long as it's not going to feel pain, as long as we're talking literally, you know, several dividing cells, I think most people would say, okay.
Well, that's not the way it is. because Warmack, the Senate candidate in Georgia, he supports abortion through the ninth month.
Yeah, see, that's crazy. Well, and here's another question that the left should be asked. If you need before abortions in the ninth month when babies can survive in, what, the fourth month now? I mean, we've got science and medical technology is so good. So we're taking Herculean – this is how crazy our society is. We're taking Herculean efforts to save babies, you know, at the absolute beginning of life when they can be saved. You know, 20 weeks, I think? I mean, I'm not a gynecologist or an obstetrician. But I think somewhere in the 20, 24 week I've heard, okay? So we're able to save babies at that point, and these people want to terminate babies? They're almost born?
Oh, what it is, it's worse than that. Because in the ninth month, in order to give the abortion has to occur in the womb. You have to go in with the scissors and then cut them up in the womb, pull out the pieces. That's what I'm going to tell you. It's a haunted house.
Yeah, no, I actually agree with you.
If it come out living, you got to do everything Herculean efforts to keep it alive.
Yeah.
So that's why you got to kill it in the womb. You got to destroy it piece by piece in the womb and pull out a leg, pull out an arm.
So how do people wrap themselves around the idea that this is okay, that a baby that would have been born within minutes anyway, instead of being, you know, late-term aborted, that's kind of a misnomer too, why wouldn't you just give birth and have an adoption? What is it about killing the baby that is so important to these people, even if it's at the absolute last minute? Do they just not want the baby to come back in 20 years and ask them, how come it's one thing to explain to your biological kid, you know, why they were put up for adoption. But how do you explain, you know, at the pearly gates that you did an abortion, you know, 5 minutes before they were born? How do you, and the left thinks that's okay. I don't understand how they think that's okay. Especially these days.
Well, when you're at the pearly gates, you're going to have these angel babies flying around, missing legs, missing arms, missing half the head crushed in.
Yeah.
You're going to have to face them at the pearly gates.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting.
This is what you fight. You're talking about a civil war. Well, that's part of the warfare. You got to lay things out, be blunt and factual.
Yeah.
You can't be trying to sugarcoat it. Tell it like it is. Black woman, look, man, if your black woman want to abort all their babies, go ahead. Just abide by the state law.
You know, I see your point on that, too. And you can still criticize and condemn and do anything you want, but people do have the right to do what the law says they have the right to do. So that's why we have laws. That's why it's so important to write the laws that we consent to be governed by, the laws that make sense, and lobby for them. But if we're going to fight this civil war,
these are the same people that high five and saying their white population is declining.
Which is kind of funny because the white population is declining for two reasons. One, white people aren't having as many babies. And two, the people that are being led into this country are not white. Here's a question for you. This would be interesting to ponder. What if we had a radical Democrat, no border, no wall policy, but they only let in white people as illegal aliens? So you had plenty of Irish and Ukrainian and I don't know, where else is a bunch of white people? Australians, and then Europeans, Chechnyans, you had, you know, Muslim white people. So it'd be interesting. Would they do that? Of course they wouldn't.
Well,
that's an interesting argument.
Clarence Thomas, Steve Harvey, and what was the doctor's name? Who was head of human resources? The person that does
Ben Carson.
Their skin is black, right?
They
hate them. Yeah, you got groups of blacks that hate them. Well, I thought you said you wanted to have blacks in position.
I think Herman Cain's wife was white, and so was
Herman Cain was black. Well, why you hate him?
I don't hate him. But why do people hate him? Well,
no, we're not. I'm talking about these CNN That I always get to CNN, like Al Sharpton, he was on CNN. Why you hate those blacks? I thought you said you wanted to have blacks in places to represent you.
And what's more diverse than an interracial marriage, if you believe in diversity?
So what it is then, in some cases of the argument, is the skin color. In some cases of the argument, it's the political views. If your political views are not mine, and if you're black, I hate you.
So part of the Civil War then, this ideological Civil War, so-called intellectual Civil War, this political Civil War that we're talking about, we're up against people that preach diversity, can't stand interracial marriage. And how do they reconcile the fact that they think that the blacks have no power, whites have all the power? So why would a black man marry a white woman? Why would he, as a black man of no power, marry a white woman who has all the power?
Which women, black women, detest.
Oh.
Which black men detest Serena Williams marrying a white man.
This is actually a really interesting topic because as we go forward with this potential civil war here, part of the ideology
is that this really warps
of race. What's that?
Okay, do you realize what they're doing? See, Serena Williams and her sister Venus had a strong father, a strong black father.
Uh-huh.
So she couldn't find no black male that meet the same attributes that her father had, and she found it in a white male.
So here's the question. What's going to happen to so-called black culture and white culture in this country with all these interracial marriages? So you get a few generations down, we're all going to be brown or something. Or beige. Wasn't that? That's like the big insight. I'm reading this article. America's going to be beige one day because the Asian, black, white, Native American, American Indian, folks are all going to kind of merge into beige. And they talked about that as being a horrible thing. Is it the fact that the more interracial marriages there are, the more people really do start to look the same, the less they can use identity politics, because we're
it's
talking
fade,
shape.
It's going it should fade away. It's just Khadijah Brown, the female black Supreme Court judge. She's married to a white male.
So now here's another question. So are leftists who are interracially married treated differently by the left than Republican conservatives who are interracially married?
I don't know. Really, that
well,
would have to be.
If,
you'd have to
if
think
Judge
about
Jackson,
that.
Who shouldn't be on the Supreme Court because she's ideologically unqualified to be there. So Judge Jackson, a leftist, Marxist leftist, is married to a white man. She's black. And how is she treated? And then you've got Clarence Thomas, who's a black man married to a white woman. So they condemn
Clarence
Thomas.
Well, you really don't know how leftist she gonna be until she start ruling. But I'm saying this: if she start ruling towards the right, you know what the excuse is gonna be, right? Oh well, she's married. It's pillow talk.
White guy.
She's been
a white guy
doctor.
That's fascinating. This is actually a really good article, it turns out, because it's so opposed to everything we believe. Let me give you a little bit more here. See if I can find abortion. Oh, here we go. When will all this end? Not with two separate nations. What America is going through is analogous to Brexit, a lumbering mutual decision to go separate ways on most things but remain connected on a few big things, such as national defense, monetary policy, and civil and political rights. Oh, I think there's a problem here. Okay. So what he really describes is the uniparty. Okay. So the uniparty. So in other words, he's dividing America firsters and leftists, and he's including the Republican Party and leftists. Listen to this. I don't even know if Robert Rice knew he did this. Think about this. If we're going to be a Brexit, but we agree on a few things, national defense, who agrees with unlimited billions for Ukraine, Afghanistan, and Iraq? Republicans and Democrats, but most Americans don't. So we're not unified on that. He says we're unified on monetary policy. Monetary policy is the national debt and the Federal Reserve. Well, the Republicans and Democrats are unified on that, but the rest of us aren't. And how about civil and political rights?
I heard somebody complain, said that we talked about Trump's tax reform. Well, it just benefits his rich friends. You know, that's the most asinine statement that a person can make. Mm-hmm. So everyone that's Trump's tax reform benefited is friends of him. Whereas the standardized deduction for married couples doubled.
Yep. Well, the exemptions went away. It was really more of a name change than anything else, and people forget that the deductions doubled, but the exemptions went away. So instead of having an exemption and a deduction, you just have one deduction. But still, it's pretty much the same amount. But that's not where the big change was. The changes were in the lowering of the rates, the lowering of the corporate tax, the lowering of income tax rates. That's where the big change was. Now, what's fascinating is that the Democrat folks, you know, they think of, well, you can't benefit the rich people by lowering their taxes, even though rich pay most of the taxes in this country. At the same time, out of one side of the mouth, out of the other side of the mouth, they're saying, well, we have to forgive loans of the rich. You know, those student loans that aren't being paid back are not being paid back by the rich. We're talking $150,000+. Doctors, lawyers, people that had horrendous student loans, which they took out themselves. I don't agree. That's what the main reason I didn't become or went to law school. When I couldn't get into flight school, was I couldn't get the loans. I could have taken the loans out and gone to law school, but I never wanted to have that financial burden, so I didn't do it. Turns out I'm doing legal stuff here every day. It's kind of fascinating. But look at this. They can't see that they're benefiting their rich friends by giving these so-called student loan forgiveness, which is really graduate student welfare for people who don't need it. They can't see that as benefiting their rich friends, whereas they criticize Trump for benefiting what they think are his rich friends, which are really people that are paying the most taxes anyway. They're people that are actually paying the taxes.
Yeah, that's so just some of the thinking that they have. Everything whose skin is not lily white, everyone whose skin is not milk white, well, they want to claim them as black. And look at Kanye West. Kanye West is the richest black man in the country. He's worth about $6 billion or so on paper.
Wow.
But when he makes the statement, mm-hmm. white lives matter,
yeah,
and he's ridiculed. See, here's the thing. Ideological thinking comes about due to many factors. And one is your economic position. As this man goes further up in the economic scale, well, he's not going to dwell with those that he probably grew up with. It don't make sense to.
No, I agree.
He take on whole new buddies.
I heard him interviewed. Now, I actually listened to some of his music. I'm not crazy about his music just because I'm not a big rap fan. So to me, the lyrics are interesting. On a personal level, he's fascinating. He's a really interesting guy. I mean, I'd love to have him on the show. You know, that would be...
He's fabulous.
What's that?
Yes, he's fabulous. Derek Katrina, he made the statement of standing up on a stage with the... I can't think of the guy. He said, Bush don't care about black people. And Jamie Foxx, I think it was Jamie Foxx, I'm not sure. White guy that played in the... Huh?
I'm going to try and contact him. I'm going to try and contact Kanye West because I saw him with Tucker Carlson. He's fascinating. He actually, first of all, if you didn't see a picture of him, you'd never know just by listening to his voice whether he was black or white. He has a very neutral voice.
Well, he's a business. He's got a business mind.
Right.
A lot of them do. You take Lil Wayne, he's got a business mind. Uh-huh. Floyd Mayweather, although couldn't read. You know, but he took his talents to make the money that he has, and he's got a business mind. The one guy called 50 Cent, he's got a business mind. Funny, they all got, but see, they use where they are to achieve the capital that they need to take them further, and that's what they do. Now, I'm saying this. When you was in the quote-unquote hood, and you develop some friends, just send them postcards. You don't need to go back there. you need to walk away from there. Because those people would drag you down into the abyss. And that's what they're doing.
He never had a hood accent because he was a military brat. So his father was in the military. He lived all over the world, wherever his father was stationed. So he never, and his father didn't have a, quote, urban black sounding accent. So he didn't grow up with that, which is quite fascinating. That's another reason, you know, it's like, you know, well, here's the question too. Do you have to sound black enough to be black? In other words, if you're a black person that speaks more of a neutral or, you know, dare I say, white accent.
Well, sound has two different meanings.
Okay.
Sound has what you, it has the vocal meaning, but it also, what you're saying is what you sound like. So when Candace Owens says that white lives matter, when Kanye West say that blue lives matter, that has nothing to do with your vocalization. That has to do with what you're saying, that you got those on the other side that don't agree with.
Well, I wonder how perception changes. Say we had someone on the show who was not that well known, but you didn't know what color they were. And people found out that they were either black or white, or made an assumption one way or the other. How much difference would that make?
It makes a lot of difference because those with trained ears would know what they're hearing.
Yeah.
See, I can listen to people and listen to the comments that they make. Yeah, I can listen to people and listen to the comments they make.
Yeah. Do I sound white?
Your comments you make, yes.
Okay.
Curious. Do the Righteous Brothers sound white?
No. I thought they were black. I'll be honest. I didn't know they were white guys. You never close your eyes anymore. You know that.
Fresh and Melody. That sound he's singing that. That sound that he sound white when he's singing that. Hell no.
No. No.
The Animals.
That was. But
House of the Rising Sun. Do they sound white? No. What's the other guy's name?
Well, they're also British. It gets worse. They're British. They're not even American. So it's fascinating. You know, Eric Burdon and the Animals was a British group, British Invasion. They don't even sound British. It gets worse. You ever hear Billy Idol sing and then hear him talk? It's like singers lose their accents. You know, he'll sing like Rebel Yell.
Tina Marie?
Who? I'm not sure who that is. I've heard the name.
Tina Marie?
Hmm.
Is she black or is she white? Until you see. So, no, there's two different things when you say sound like. Sound like is the vocalization, one thing.
Right.
Then sound like is what you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah, if you hadn't seen Ben Carson, you know, people wouldn't assume. I guess, now, do people assume that they're listening to someone of the same color? I don't really think about that too much. But
I used
to
have people accuse me of, people used to misjudge me as being white years ago.
Okay, I'll be honest here. You don't sound white. You know, I listen to your accent. If I did not know you
were
black, I would guess it just by listening to you.
Yeah, because the ears have evolved. Because now you have the ability to put a face to the verbiage. Back in those times, you didn't have
no verbiage.
Video phones.
It's not the verbiage. It's actually the quality of your voice. Black voices sound different.
I tell you, one time I went to, I was working in Detroit on a construction project, and I needed a place to stay. I looked in the paper, and I found a rooming house. And I talked to the lady, this white woman, talked to her on the phone. So when I got there and knocked on the door, and she opened the door, you should have seen the expression on her face. She said, oh, no.
But what was she expecting? You know, like John Wayne or something?
I guess See, I'm from the Midwest. That's way up north.
Okay.
And it's different. And plus, I was using, because of my environment I grew up on, my dialect was not like the dialect of others in other areas in the quote-unquote black community.
Okay.
So I had black people even say that, I thought you was a white person.
No, I knew right away, but and then I saw a picture of you. It was interesting. She's a real character. You're a curmudgeon, which is kind of funny. But we all, that's another thing about radio, too. We all form pictures. I literally had one of the guys here in town, Quinn Studer. He's a big industrialist. He owns the hospitals, you know, made a whole bunch of money. And he used to put on this thing called Civicon. And it was about strong towns and, you know, keeping big highways out of your downtown historic districts like we're trying to do here. And he was on my show, but he'd never met me. And so when I met him at one of these Civicon conferences, I introduced myself. I said, "Hi, I'm Greg Penglis. You were on my show last week." He looks at me and says, "No, you're not." What do you mean I'm not? I said, "Yeah, I am. Trust me, it's me." "No, I can't be you." "Why can't it be me?" "Well, you don't look like you sound." So apparently I don't look like I sound.
I have blacks board down here, like in the store checkout line.
Yeah.
And then after, you know, I always flirt with women. And they say, you're not from down here, are you? I said, "No, I'm not."
Well, how about Josie's voice? Is there any doubt in your mind that Josie's Latina?
Yes. No. I can tell she's Latina.
Yeah.
The words she says.
Not a bad thing. You know, I'm not talking about this in terms of being a bad thing that you can identify somebody's background by their voice. You know, I can tell a French person by their accent. If a French person speaks English, I can tell they're French immediately. But it's just an interesting way to judge. But in terms of the Civil War that we're talking about, the coming Civil War, and we never got to who's running the country. I think we established that as we did that another day. But this is quite fascinating. This is what we're up against, though. When we talk about the left, they're thinking groups. They're thinking, like we say, everything from interracial marriage. They're obsessed with abortion to the exclusion of almost everything else. And that is
like
bringing
city
to the aliens. Look
at the city council member in Los Angeles where the one Martinez had to resign because of what they said that she said in a conversation with a group was racist. But she said it in her own language. I don't know if it's racist or not. She used words in their language. I think one word was definition with little monkey.
Oh, I see. I remember that. Yeah. You know, singing too. Remember we had Dr. Stella Emanuel on? She's from Cameroon. She has an accent. You know, she's almost hard to understand sometimes.
Oh, yes, she is. I've seen cases where in a school district, normally a school district in the high school, that mm-hmm. parents didn't want their children to be in the classroom with this one Nigerian teacher. They say his accent is too strong. He's black.
Well, some Nigerian accents are pretty strong. Well, how about South African white people? Their accent's really strong, too. You know, the Afrikaans, the Dutch-based, South African accent, that's pretty hard to understand, too, sometimes.
Yeah, and then the people can contemplate that somebody with white skin is African. Just like recently, Nigeria said that no foreign actresses or actors would be displayed on advertisement. So the first thing some of the blacks said, well, that's good. There won't be no whites acting in Nigeria. What they don't understand that you have white Nigerians.
What's the population of white Nigerians? 5%, 10%? Do you know?
Well,
I'm just curious.
Well, I don't know what the percentage is, but Zambia had a white vice president.
Yeah, we talked about Fujimori. Argentina had a Japanese ancestry president. Remember Fujimori from Argentina?
Yeah.
That really throws people. Yeah. All right. So here's the point, though. If we get back to how this nation is divided up, the left literally sees everything in terms of skin color and group. And here's another one, too. When they talk about – and they believe these huge lies, that like the election was honorable and people who lie about it, who people say who think differently are lying about it. So they're defending things that are – they're defending lies. And they're defending to the death their own lies of voter suppression and elections and things like that. It's really quite fascinating. I don't know how they twist their minds to do it, but there's some serious brain twisting going on. Here's another one it talks about, too. He says that in recent polls – this is Robert Reich, former Secretary of Labor under Bill Clinton. He says in recent polls, American voters ranked threats to democracy – is the most important issue facing the country. And, well, now a conservative wouldn't say that because a conservative doesn't think we're a democracy and knows we're a republic. So whenever the left talks about threats to democracy, that's a contradiction in itself. because this country, this whole country is a threat to democracy because we're not a democracy. We've always been a threat to democracy. Who the hell wants a democracy? That's like one of the worst systems on earth because it always leads to socialism, communism, fascism, and Nazism. They get voted in. I don't want a democracy. I want individual rights declared in a constitution and a limited government. That's what a republic is. Two totally different forms of government. Yet that. So, but we have to fight people that think democracy is a good thing, even though it's a terrible thing. Then it said, yeah, so recent polls, Americans voted threats to democracy as the most important issue facing the country at a time, here we go, here's the liberal again, at a time of climate collapse, inflation, and a pandemic. This is a remarkable statement on the fragility of America's fundamental rights and freedoms. Now, you pointed this out the other day, God-given versus fundamental, right? So what's a fundamental right? So what's a fundamental right as opposed to a God-given right? This is an ideological battle, right?
Well, fundamentals is based on performance, basically, like it is in stocks. You have certain fundamentals. You got the earnings per share. You got the capital, the float, the capital. So, but the God-given rights is something that you can't touch. I mean, that's where you were born.
Yep.
How do a newborn kitten know to hiss at you and bow its back? That's God-given.
That's instinctive. I think that's different than fundamental. Fundamental means the basic level. Instinctive means a subconscious level. And God-given means a separate level, separate from government. So let's explore this a little bit because I think we're on to something here, too. See, people give the
Well, they
give
had God-given rights before there ever was government. Human beings had those rights, those traits. A human being,
so
if he was attacking it would pick a club up to defend itself.
But they talk about America's fundamental rights and freedoms, not Americans with an N. So they're not talking about Americans. They're talking about America's. In other words, the nation of America has fundamental rights and freedoms, not individual Americans. That, to me, is fascinating. That's an ideological battle, part of our Civil War.
Oh, it is.
Okay. So
yeah,
fundamental
rights. Right.
Go ahead.
Yeah, you're right. That's what. I mean, that's the difference. And we have to put emphasis on it. It's just like you use the word organic rather than fossil fuels.
Yep. Total change of perception. See, I recognize words are important. Mark Levin spends time. He recognizes words are important. A lot of people don't realize. This is what I analyze. When I analyze...
Let me give you an example.
And analyze writing. I analyze writing. I look very specifically at the words, the tenses, the commas, the apostrophes. I look at everything. Because people don't realize how much they give away. What's that?
Let me give you an example where people are just dumb.
Oh, feel free.
All well drilling. Some of those drills go down 1,000, 1,500, 2,000 feet. So you mean to tell me that dinosaurs roam 2,000 feet below the present surface? That's saying that the earth was about the size of a marble.
Yeah, how does
and then somebody came along and piled a bunch of dirt on it.
Well, actually, though, there is. The continents have flipped over each other, and they have submerged. They've done all kinds of things. How did seashells get up in the Sierra Mountains in California, 10,000 feet high? That was land that at one point
it's
was
because the water level was that high.
No. It's because the land moved. You know, but that's a different thing. But that's interesting. It's a good point. So continents move. I mean, I lived along the San Andreas Fault, which is the division between the Pacific Plate and the North American Plate. And the Pacific Plate's moving north, North American Plate's moving south. No, maybe I could have that back.
Yeah,
but anyway, one plate's moving north, the other plate's moving south.
If you're drilling for oil in Siberia, mm-hmm. So dinosaurs lived in that cold climate?
Not when it was cold. Dinosaurs don't like cold. They're reptiles. They're cold-blooded. They couldn't live in
Siberia. You know, the whole earth was a big snowball at one time, right?
So here's the question then. Did a meteorite change the climate, or did the first ice age kill off the dinosaurs? I never thought about that until just now.
Well, I don't think dinosaurs was living when you had the – you know, when you had the ice age, you had the you had ice that was over a mile thick, mile high.
Yosemite Park in California, Yosemite National Park, which should be a state park, is Half Dome was carved out by a glacier. And it's like 4,000 feet up. That's
why some civilization did not begin above a certain latitude, because it's not conducive to mammals, which we are. It has to produce around the equatorial. It has to start around the equatorial range. And that's what anthropology...
Yeah. People lived through the Ice Age, but they didn't advance. I think you had Neanderthal and Cro-Magnon man was around during the last Ice Age, 50,000 some odd years ago. But it wasn't until we got modern Homo sapiens with a warmer climate. And the question is, is humanity going to survive the next Ice Age, especially with all the people in the world?
Homo sapiens, all the species of humanists began on the equatorial region.
Right.
That's where they began. Because the Ice Age didn't come down below a certain latitude.
Yeah, but it was before the – but they've had several Ice Ages during that time, because if you figure man is what, like a million years old or something? How old is Peking Man or Australopithecus or Olduvai-Gush?
Australopithecus was ape-like.
Okay, so what the first
– Australopithecus, both was they and Robustus was ape-like. But what I'm saying is that the edge of the ice did not come down below a certain latitude because of the sun.
Right. But there weren't that many people then. Now you try and squish 8 billion people in an ice age into the middle latitudes, most of which is ocean. I don't know if I want to be around for that.
Yeah, so human life as we know it today would have been developed in the equatorial ranges in Africa. I mean, everybody came to that conclusion.
But it developed after the last ice age, or it advanced. It developed. We didn't really make any progress until the ice age, until we got through the last ice age.
Developed as people began to wander around. That's what it was.
Yeah.
They wandered.
Well, it's interesting. We've got Jesus Christ was around 2,000 years ago, 2,200. You know, the Chinese and Korean and Japanese civilizations go back about 7,000 years. The last ice age was about 50,000 years. You know, so you've got – we've talked to Chief Dan. We're talking about the Creek tribe being in this country about 60,000 years. So we've got a lot of history that we really haven't covered. Modern history is what? Since the Dark Ages, the Middle Ages, you know, our history really began probably with the Renaissance. And that's the 1500s.
Well, see, Chief Dan is of a group that migrated coming out of Asia across the Bering Strait. They would have came out of Asia. You are where you just came from.
Right.
Then you settled and evolved into something else.
Yeah, he says they came up from Mexico. But they're not the indigenous
because it was indigenous people that was here before Indians got here. Indians are not indigenous. They were migrants.
Right. So who are the indigenous people?
When you go down and look at the Aztecs and the Mayans.
Okay, so I was right on that. Incas?
Incas, Aztecs, Mayans, Taino. Of them, the big bad wolf was the Aztecs. They were the warring type.
Right.
And they kill.
Yeah. This is an interesting discussion. So as this country has developed, there have been several different evolutions of people, you know, from Incas, Aztecs, and Mayans to migratory who became American Indians to the white Europeans. This is quite fascinating. And now we've
Because they migrated close to the ocean where they got their food source from. They came down the West Coast and across the southern edge, the Gulf, where they could get their food source from. Then later on, you had some that came down the middle who became plainsmen, and they had to follow herds of buffalo.
Which there were. That's interesting, too. One of the places I want to explore more is Polynesia, Pacific Islanders. One of the most fascinating places, I took my kid when we lived in California, we went to Oahu, and we went to the Polynesian Cultural Center. We spent a whole day there. So Saw the show at night. It was fabulous. I learned how to make fire with a stick and a piece of wood. It was fun.
Well, we learned how to do that as Boy Scouts.
Well, I know, but that's what I learned. I didn't learn the Boy Scouts.
And you know, the funny thing about that, that's simple, but you know where the first fire came from is when somebody picked up a piece of hot coal from a volcano eruption and ran to the village.
Or a lightning strike.
Well, yeah, lightning strike.
Yeah, so, I mean, it could have been either one, yeah. Anyway, Polynesian culture is fascinating. Like, you know, and how these island folks form, and all from Tahiti to Hawaii to Marshall Islands, the Seychelles, some of the other places out there. It's fascinating.
You know, you had a very interesting guest on last week, and we was talking about science and what he was a science teacher.
Oh, Mike.
But he was very interesting because he was very factual way things were. We had good science teachers. Our science lessons on physical science, earth science, and also biology was so much seemingly to me advanced than what children are exposed to today.
Now, Mike's going to be on every week. I liked having him on. I thought about it. Actually, I thought about it during the show. I came to a rather quick conclusion that he should come on and keep joining us on Fridays. I like Friday Science. It was fun. We had a great discussion. So, yeah, he'll be back this Friday and hopefully most Fridays until he's had enough. But, yeah, let me go back to this term fundamental because I want to get about 10, we can run overtime. I don't want to run too much overtime today. But if you look at fundamental, it talks about forming a necessary base or core of central importance, the protection of fundamental human rights. That's an interesting example, right? An interpretation of evidence is fundamental to the historian's craft. That's not true either. You need to find out what really happened. Don't interpret. And this is affecting or relating to the essential nature of something or the crucial point about an issue. Then it says, so basic as to be hard to alter, resolve, or overcome. So that's fundamental. Now, I find it interesting that these folks, that Robert Reich, the leftist, uses the term fundamental rights and freedoms for America as opposed to individual rights and freedoms for Americans, the citizens, the individual citizens. He never says individual at any point in this thing. I don't see the word individual anywhere. But I find it fascinating.
Well, you know, it depends on...
Yeah.
It depends on the era of the dictionary, because in the Webster's fifth edition, the definition for gorilla is West African female.
What? Gorilla?
Yes, sir. In your school library, those real big old thick dictionary, you're probably looking at a fourth or maybe a fifth edition of Webster, and you go in there and start looking at the definition of words like gorilla. Would be a West African female.
Interesting. Wow. Well, you look at well-regulated, that means well-equipped. You know, when we talk about a well-regulated militia, it doesn't mean a government-controlled militia. It means a civilian army of folks that are regulated like infantry soldiers.
The Ku Klux Klan was a Christian organization.
Was it what kind of organization?
Christian organization is defined.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting. Yeah, well, it's a weird branch of Christianity. I don't remember, I don't see the church of Ku Klux Klan. Yeah. Anyway, another thing the left talks about in our ideological civil war with them, they talk about threats to democracy. That's a big thing with them. You know, in other words, if you challenge their climate change nonsense, that's a threat to democracy. If you question the election that they stole, that's a threat to democracy. If you challenge anything about what they think or believe, if you say that abortion is not a right, that's a threat to democracy. They put everything in terms of democracy. In other words, the people voting, one over half, is something, you know, just as abortion is sacred to them, this idea that one over half, a democracy that can make any decision for any people, and which can be influenced, of course, by everybody, that's the greatest way to run a society. That you make really good decisions with one over half, which means one less than half disagree. That's not to me a good
decision. 51% control to 49%.
Say that again?
51% control 49%.
Exactly. And so that's why I wanted to make that point really clearly. So in other words, 49% have no rights in a democracy because the rights are determined by the 51%. And in a republic, you can be one person, you know, if you were the only person exercising Second Amendment rights, it would not change the right for anybody. Whereas in a democracy, you wouldn't have a right at all because it would be voted away. And people need to understand that difference. So whereas they consider, you know, conservatives and Republicans and the Republic a threat to democracy, I consider democracy a threat to the United States and to individual rights. Because in a democracy, your rights can be voted away. So one of the big arguments we're going to have in our intellectual civil war with the left is that not only is that their, quote, threat to democracy, their democracy is the threat. They are a threat to us with their democracy. Because in a democracy, we don't have America. America is not a democracy. It can't exist as a democracy. Constitutional rights cannot exist in a democracy because they can be voted away. There's nothing permanent or fundamental about something that can be voted away. So when they talk about the fragility of America's fundamental rights and freedoms in a democracy, there is nothing fundamental about a democracy because it can be changed anytime. They don't understand
that. That's
right. Or do they understand that?
Yeah.
They don't care.
They don't. They just ignorant to it, and actually ignorant, teetering on the verge of stupidity.
Yeah, because every time I hear the term democracy, I scream and yell. It's like, you people don't understand. You have no trial in a democracy. There's a reason that a jury has to have a unanimous vote. That's a republic. If the jury voted by majority, you'd have a hell of a lot more convictions. Because all you need is 7 to 5 votes on a jury, and a person could be executed. Well, what if 5 people believe they were innocent? Well, sorry, democracy, bye. So there's no greater threat to individual rights and the rights of the accused than a democracy. A lynch mob is a democracy, right?
Well, yeah. Everybody agreed that we need to hang this sucker.
Yeah. No evidence, no vote, no trial, no established procedure, no due process, no arraignment, no grand jury, no jury at all. They just
Jesus crucifixion was
right?
A democracy.
Say that again.
Jesus crucifixion was a democracy. They chose Barabbas over Jesus.
There you go.
All right.
So
well, I'm getting ready to get out of here.
Okay, I'll be out of here too. I'm just going to finish the last couple of paragraphs. I'll be done. I want to finish this article. This has been fascinating. Thanks, Bianchi. Appreciate the debate or discussion.
Thank
whatever
you.
We did. There you are.
Mm-hmm.
So just to finish this, so I make a complete thought here. The last little bit, I'll just comment on this briefly, then I'll take off myself because this has been a great day. And I don't like talking to my cell phone because I feel I have to talk louder. But for those who don't know what happened, if you're listening live, the power cut out partway through my show. And so I had to restart it, and it wouldn't let me connect my microphone again, so I had to dial back in. And here I am. Maybe I'll try taking the mic out and plugging it back in and see if that works differently. All right. So the last little bit, he says, the country, this is Robert Reich, former Secretary of Labor under Bill Clinton. He says, the country is seeing a dizzying number of assaults on democracy, from draconian abortion bans to a record number of book bans. It's kind of funny. Politicians who spread lies and sought to delegitimize the 2020 election are pursuing offices that will put them in control of the country's election machinery. Which is exact because the Democrats want to be in charge of the election machinery. So this is kind of funny. And then it says, meanwhile, the Supreme Court is enforcing its own agenda on abortion, which is not true, guns, they're enforcing the Second Amendment, and environmental protections. That's not true either. Often an opposite to public opinion. So this is the other thing they say too. So you hear from the left a lot of times, democracy and public opinion. You're going against public opinion. Well, in a republic, that doesn't matter because the minority have rights. The individual has rights. So public opinion really is irrelevant. I mean, it's interesting to note, but in terms of your own life, public opinion is irrelevant. If public opinion was that all guns should be done away with, all guns can't be done away with. Because even if only one person or even if nobody wanted to exercise the Second Amendment rights, we'd still have a God-given right to defense, and the government couldn't touch it. So that's the difference between a Republican and a democracy. You really need to understand that. So we're really fighting. A lot of this civil war that we're really fighting is between a democracy and a republic. And a republic is guaranteed to us by Article 4, Section 4 of the Constitution. We are guaranteed a republican form of government. I wish they would have just said a republic because it sounds so much like the Republican Party. So there we go. So the last little bit here, it says, meanwhile, the Supreme Court is enforcing. Okay, there we go. It says, with so much on the line, journalism that relentlessly reports the truth, uncovers injustice, and exposes misinformation is absolutely essential. This is fascinating, too. I wish we had Pianchi for this last little bit of discussion. Journalism. Okay, so journalism is supposed to be objective. Well, there's nothing objective about journalism from the left. It's pure propaganda. It's just journalism that relentlessly reports the truth. Well, they don't do that. Uncovers injustice. Well, that depends on what you mean by injustice. I think a stolen election is injustice. I think pushing a bogus climate change is injustice. I think a bunch of mandates for an experimental snake oil jab and the lockdowns and the school closures and everything else that happened under COVID was injustice. And where was the journalism on that? It was censored. Why? Because in the next part of the sentence he says, and exposes misinformation. So who's to determine what's misinformation? See, that's the problem. So in order to determine what's misinformation, you have to be in control of information. And if you're in control of information, you can't possibly have a democracy. You certainly can't have a republic. But that's one of the requirements of the left, is the control of the information. Because the only way you can determine what's misinformation and punish people for giving what they call misinformation is because you're in control of the information. And if you're in control of the information, that's not journalism. That's dictatorship. So this is where it gets complicated. This is where it gets very interesting. And then it says, we need your support to help to power it. Unlike many others, the Guardian has not. Okay, so it talks about, so it's fundraising for the Guardian. But that's basically it. I think we've uncovered a whole bunch of stuff, and I'm going to keep these articles. They're quite fascinating. Go to our Action Radio legal page and some of the other pages within the Action Radio group on Facebook. There's about 20 different groups, and that's how we put all this together. So I played a bunch of things. I'll play a couple more. Just to remind you that our website for our laws is writeyourlaws.com. That's WriteYourLaws, writeyourlaws.com. If you want to contact me, if you want to be a sponsor of the show and you believe in what we're doing here to promote freedom, Greg@writeyourlaws.com. That's how you get a hold of me there. You can donate at paypal.com/paypalme/actionradio. You can get us on our Skype line. We have a live Skype line. We have live chat. We're here most days 7 to 10 a.m. Central time, but not always. It just depends on guests and things like that. And we got a wild rest of the week. Thursday and Friday shows are going to be unbelievable. So much so I can't give you the details right now. Sorry. Let me play a couple things. We'll be out of here, and I'll see you tomorrow at we're going to start a little bit later. I think we're starting at 9 a.m. tomorrow, and I'll explain why later. But we're starting 9 a.m. tomorrow. It's going to be fun. Talk to you then.
This is Greg Penglis. So what is Action Radio? It is a radio show with its own citizen legislature. That's you, the listener. It is a fully interactive system of listeners, expert guests, social media, writing bills, legislator input, bill submission, lobbying, and citizen action. Action Radio is the future of talk radio, using all the available technology in one completely integrated new system. You are listening to Action Radio Online with Greg Penglis. The webpage for all Action Radio shows and podcasts is blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Please share our show with all your friends and family, both nationally and internationally. The guiding principle of Action Radio is this: we the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed.